constant support.
Some restrictions may apply.
Call Medical Weight Loss now for your free consultation. Call 1-800-GET-SLIM. That's 1-800-GET-SLIM.
We've got a program that fits you perfectly in medical weight loss. It's a shape of things to come.
This is WRIF.com.
Twice.
Every Tuesday, 101 WRIF,
the home of rock and roll,
brings you Tuber Tuesday. Keep it locked on the Riff all day this Tuesday for back-to-back badass blasts of your favorite riff rock band.
Plus, the Riff gives you the hottest tickets to the coolest concerts and events happening around the Motor City.
Tuber Tuesday.
Double the Riff rock.
Double the Riff prizes.
Learn it. Know it. Live it.
Tuber Tuesday on the Riff. From 101 WRIF.
If it rocks.
If it really rocks.
Now, again, transmission.
Here comes the music.
Hello. How are you?
Hey, it's Joe and Mike, and it was Don't Stump Mike, and unfortunately for me, the subject was Friends, and I've never even seen an episode of Friends.
What city do they live in?
Oh, jeez.
Oh, wait a minute.
You have like two notes.
Well, let me think. I mean, actually, I just wanted to say L.A.
Oh, you said L.A.?
Yeah, L.A.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
You're killing me, Greg. He was on hold for a long time.
Oh.
Oh, Greg, aren't you bummed? Aren't you going, geez. Mike, Central Perk, come on, man.
I know. Oh, jeez, man.
Why did you think he would get New York? Why did you think that was so easy?
I knew it was between New York or L.A. I just hoped he just guessed the right one.
You and Mike, the more broadcast program.
Well, this is an unceremonious beginning. Hi, Peter Werby here with you on WRIF in Detroit. Where's our opener? I demand an opener. Let's see, 144. I should know this by now, right? Oh, man, it has happened in other forms of media. Probably not, but what the hell. Primary listening audience for WRIF, or if you're anywhere in the country or around the world on the internet, welcome. Remember, too, you can always hear archive shows, you can hear repeat shows at radiopower.org and White Rose Society. Ben, I'm sorry, why do I always forget? It's either .org or .com that also archives the show. All right, so I've been away. Here's what Janik writes me. I love this. How many weeks are you going to take? You're not the president. Stop acting like him. Remember, Bush was up till September 11th. He'd been off 43% of the time. Yeah. So I took a vacation. This was a vacation. This was, you know, vacation is supposed to be recreation, recreation. You're supposed to recreate yourself after work. Well, yeah, it's not. I'm not looking at stock reports under fluorescent lights, fluorescent lights, or in a shop. So this is work I like to do. and not demeaning either of those jobs, but those you really do need vacation from. You really do need it. In fact, there's not enough here in America. We've talked about that before. United States workers get the worst vacations of any workforce in the industrial world. It's getting worse, too. It's getting worse. Anyways, I wound up on an island off the coast of Massachusetts, a little teeny island, no cars, no cash. I mean, it wasn't like, what was that, Club Med? It wasn't like that. Just kind of, I was with family. I didn't need to put out any money. No TV, no cell phones, no internet. So I had no idea what was going on. Paper would come about every 5 days, and we were there for 7 days. So as soon as I came off, someone said, "That's pretty awful about that guy getting beheaded, huh?" And I went, "What?" You know, I mean, that was the first thing we thought about. And who was it was asking me? Someone was saying, "What did you do there?" I said, "Well, we talked about that. My family and I, all we did was walk, talk, eat, and read. That was it. Nothing much more to do there. Couldn't swim. Way too cold. And but it did me right." And I was listening to that. This was incredible. I had never read this book before, and then listened to it on CD because we drove there. Now they wound up driving 2,000 miles. Who does that anymore? Isn't that weird? The cars get better and better, and people just don't take these long-distance trips anymore. Used to be, back in the day, people would be driving, "Let's go to California, man. Okay, you know, we'll drive straight through. Let's drive to Florida." Yeah, stuff like that. Doesn't happen as much anymore. Anyways, I listened to Al Franken's Lies and the Lying Liars Who Tell Them. And this guy is pretty incredible. I'd always had an appreciation for him, but I never really wanted to read the book because I often see that stuff as just what I call data. Yeah. In other words, you know, these Republicans and conservatives are a pack of liars. And when you get done reading it, about 2 weeks, someone says, "Well, what's the Al Franken book about?" And you say, "Well, you know, all these conservatives are lying." Well, that's the premise, right? That's the title of the book. And the details are stunning. Absolutely stunning. But I did some serious reading. I don't know why I should do that, but serious in terms of literature. James Jones, the author who wrote about his experiences in World War II, From Here to Eternity, The Thin Red Line. They had a book that hadn't been out in about 20 years. He died in 1977, called The Merry Month of May, about the student and worker uprisings in 1968. He was there in Paris when it was all going on. And French society was almost flipped over. But, I don't know. I guess I'd recommend it. Tom Hartman's book is pretty interesting. We interviewed him about it on this broadcast. We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Go to TomHartman.com. His name's spelled a little differently, but if you spell it anyway, you can get to Tom Hartman's website, TomHartman.com. And it's an illustrated book, like a comic book in a way, but really lays out all the issues very, very well. And I read this old edition of The Scarlet Pimpernel. See, I don't always read liberal books. The Scarlet Pimpernel was a pose of the French Revolution, right? And he was saving the aristocrats. He was risking his life to save aristocrats. Why? I don't know, but he did it. Interesting book written about 100 years ago, so I read that. All right, the big stories, of course, interestingly, driving everything off the front pages to some extent, or at least that's what this is what what I'm going to talk about is what it seems to me that everyone is talking about, not the fact that this shabby war in Iraq and occupation continues to waste taxpayer money, not that the economy still isn't doing anything like Bush contends. Remember, there was a guy on a couple of weeks ago who said, "Oh, hey, all these great new jobs are just terrific." And this proves that the Bush tax cut, see, we say it just went to the wealthy, right? If you're hanging there with bated breath, we're going to talk about Michael Moore's Fahrenheit 9/11, but you know how discursive I am. You know, it's hard for me to keep on the subject, and everything has a little branch. So 2 minutes, and then we're off. Anyway, someone called in and said that, see, the Bush tax plan is working after all. No matter who you say got it, the jobs are now starting to flow. Well, he's already lost 3 million jobs, so it's nowhere near even coming back to zero, let alone creating jobs. Plus, he said how many he was going to create. But here, this is really bad news for all of us, except for the ultra-wealthy, Bush's pals. New figures from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics shows that the president's tax cut has not benefited America's working families. In fact, average American workers are making less today than they were a year ago. Isn't that great? So average American workers are making less today than they were only a year ago. That's according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. This decline in earnings has occurred as a result of stagnant income growth and rising prices faced by America's families. And the Bureau reports that the average earnings in a year dropped about 0.5% when adjusted for inflation. While wages declined, prices continued to rise. Premiums for employer-based health insurance increased almost 14% last year. Gasoline prices have risen to levels not seen in two decades, although now it's down to 180, and we're saying, oh, what a bargain. I mean, that's their deal. In the meantime, all of Bush's buddies in the oil companies, their profits are way, way up. Also, tuition is up 14% at public four-year colleges and universities, 13% at community colleges. So I don't know who the hell is going to be able to afford to go to college. All right, Michael Moore. I was somewhere out there, you know, not connected to reality when the opening of Michael Moore's film occurred last Friday. This last Friday here. Everything I've heard, it was an absolute tumult at these theaters. In fact, if you have any stories to share, if you were at any of the openings, I'd like to hear from you. 313-298-WRIF is the night call number here. And this is an amazing phenomenon. The first newspaper I saw, let me see, was on Saturday. What is today? I'm totally lost. Sunday, right. Must be because I'm on the air. Was yesterday. And it was USA Today, and it was the weekend paper. And there is Michael Moore's face holding up a little envelope, and it says, Fahrenheit 9/11, will it change any voter's mind? Michael Moore hopes his film will help defeat Bush. Blah, blah. Skeptics say impact on election will be limited. Who knows? The main thing is, here is this guy from Flint that has become this national phenomena with this film that makes a series of stupendous charges against the Bush administration. That they did not, right below it, it says, most see Iraq war as a mistake, but Bush gains. Well, go figure on that one. Anyways, there's all these contentions that that Bush sat on his hands while September 11th, the preparations for it by the terrorists, even though any number of signs were given and did absolutely nothing. What is Al Franken in his book calls it? Oh, yeah, Operation Ignore. So Cheney and the gang, Condi, Rice and the gang, Bush, of course, who was on vacation both mentally and physically. Remember, Bush, before September 11th, said, I'm going to work 24-7, 24 days a month, 7 months a year. Ha 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 ha, and he's off on another vacay. In the meantime, this terrorist apparatus, which was probably one of the most ineffective in terms of its pre-strike operation than one can imagine. It literally was the gang that couldn't shoot straight. But given that the fact that the U.S. security apparatus was absolutely, totally hobbled by Bush inattentiveness, they were able to carry out this horrendous strike against the American people. So that's one of the contention. Also, that the Bush family connections with the Saudis and even the bin Laden families hobbled both the ability to investigate who was behind all of this, and also that the Bush family has gained tremendously through its connections with the Saudis, and a number of other contentions as well. The war, as we've said repeatedly here on this program, that the war in Iraq was based on absolute BS, that they knew it was baloney to begin with, but lied to the American people, thinking we were too stupid ever to think on our own and too frightened to actually take part in any critical thinking. So suddenly, this mass phenomena, this spectacle of incredible proportions has occurred based around Michael Moore's film Fahrenheit 9/11. It took in almost $22 million in its first 3 days, becoming the first documentary ever to debut as Hollywood's top weekend film. In other words, it beat out all these silly other films like Dodgeball and White Chicks and I don't even know what these things are, The Terminal, The Notebook, even beat out Harry Potter. Shrek 2. I'd like to see that. Garfield the movie, not the cat, really. Oh, terrible. Two Brothers, The Stepford Wives. I want to see that as well. So anyways, I guess I have an answer to this, but I'm going to ask it anyways, give you a shot at it. What do you ascribe this incredible amount of attention that this film has received? It's sort of the left's Passion of the Christ. Remember, they got all this, very similar deal occurred before it was being denounced and what have you. The only thing is, there was nothing in the Passion of Christ that everybody, whether they saw it or didn't see it, didn't know about it anyway. I mean, everybody knows the story. It was just whether you wanted to sit through this sadomasochistic, flog film and feel worse about yourself and think, geez, the Son of God had to die for me in such a hideous manner because I'm such a horrible person and I'm sinful, and see all that flesh flying. On the other hand, much of what is contained in, I would say virtually everything that's contained in Michael Moore's Fahrenheit 9-1-1 wasn't known to the majority of American people, because had they known it, none of this Bush war and the whole web of lies that supports the Bush administration would have made it tumble down a long time ago. And I use the word web purposely, because there's not much strength to it. And that's why the Republicans are going on this hysteria campaign against Michael Moore and the Fahrenheit 9-1-1 film. I have on my website at peterwerby.com, have you seen it yet? Because that's what everyone says immediately. No, I haven't had a chance. I just got back in town about 3 hours before showtime. And I think I'm going to go tomorrow. I'm going to go tomorrow to see it at a matinee, and then all over the country there's going to be a couple of thousand house meetings that's organized by MoveOn.org. You can go to their website, or you can go to my website as well, PeterWerby.org, PeterWerby.org, and you put in your zip code, and the information's on my site. It's a little more difficult to go to MoveOn.org, although that's easier to spell. And you put in your zip code, and it tells you where there's a house party. You can have a house party of your own. Michael Moore is going to have an internet connection. People are going to ask questions. But even more importantly, even though it's centered around viewing an image on a screen, people are getting together. And that's really what's important, because these manipulators of our reality, these masters of the spectacle that think we are just a pack of dummies and they can tell us any sort of lies that they want. You know, Iraq has weapons of mass destruction. We give all the money, tax breaks to the wealthy. That's going to help everybody. Anything. Yeah. We support the environment. We support the middle class and the working class. The whole pack of lies that these Republicans and conservatives tell are based on an assumption that we are never going to get together, because they control the images to the extent that when we consume them individually and passively, it's pretty hard to confront them. And that's why they hate Michael Moore's movie, because it's the other side of the debate. But still, partly the question I'm asking, I've never really got to that too much, is that why do you think this is such a big deal? Why do you think that that is setting records? In one weekend, Michael Moore's film has grossed as much as the entirety of the run of Bowling for Columbine. So this is going to be huge. This is going to absolutely be huge. So if you've had any, if you went to any of the openings, if you know any more about these house parties, if you have any thoughts about it, whether you have seen it or not seen it. I haven't seen it. So, I was going to call my friend Curtis Ellis in New York. Curtis, are you listening? You listen to this broadcast? I was going to, because he's a film critic and he saw it. Yeah. Anyways, also, Republicans are behind the effort to censor Fahrenheit 911. You know about this, right? There was another one of these fake groups, something called Move America Forward or something like that, set up because they were really shocked at Michael Moore's calumny against our leaders. So it turns out that it's Republican operatives, of course, and it's a Republican consultation firm, consulting firm has set this up. That's no big thought. And there actually has been censorship. Theater owners have received death threats. Because you got to remember, here's the conservative mind. Politically fascist personality bully. All bullies are, you don't find liberal bullies, right? It's not there. Here's what Michael Moore said. The other thing they're trying to do is they're trying to get the ads for Michael Moore's film pulled because they say that violates the election laws. Here's what Moore says. I want to thank all the right-wing organizations out there who tried to stop the film, either from their harassment campaign that didn't work on the theater owners or going to the FEC, the Federal Elections Commission, to get our ads removed from television to all the things that have been said on television. It's only encouraged more people to go and see it. So, yeah, I think he's right there. And let's see here. 9 out of 10 film reviewers for Daily Papers say that Fahrenheit 9/11 is an excellent film. 63 Daily Papers, 56 gave the film a positive rating, 7 abstaining. Let's see, how many didn't give it? With only 7 abstaining. Oh, 7 said it was bad, including the Detroit Free Press. Now, all of these issues that are raised by Michael Moore, all the contentions and accusations are up for challenge. They're up for debate. But this is the first time. These haven't been debated publicly. These haven't been inserted into the public dialogue. That's the problem. All right, I'm giving away what I think the answer is, why there's such a big hubbub about that. I'd still use that word, hubbub. From Tom Flacco, and Tom Flacco, I hope I'm saying his name right, it's F-L-O-C-C-O, does a lot of good writing. Now, is this just TomFlacco.com? Yeah, TomFlacco.com, T-O-M-F-L-O-C-C-O.com. That Fahrenheit September 11, 9/11 is censored in Pennsylvania and in Philadelphia. Let's see. Get just the headlines here. Michael Moore's controversial new movie was completely blacked out in densely Republican vote-heavy Delaware County and faced near-total censorship in the fifth largest U.S. market, Philadelphia and its Delaware Valley suburbs. As the film opened yesterday on just 12 screens out of 377, that's 3%. Of the 43 Philadelphia area theaters. Now, in Detroit, there's at least I can't begin to tell you how many films are or how many theaters are showing this. So even with this, why would they do this? Would they give in to these hate messages and these threats? And see, that's the conservative mind. Don't let people debate things democratically, because if they do, we're in trouble. So they send out the hate mongers, the death threats, the economic boycotts. So politically fascist, personality bully. You're listening to the Night Call Show, by the way. I'm Peter Werby, 313-298-WRIF. If you saw this film, I'd like to hear what you thought. Anyways, so here is the deal. One of this group of theaters that has decided not to show this because, it's just a bad film, is Regal Cinemas. Well, guess who owns Regal Cinemas? I won't go within all the details. You can go to Tom Flacco, F-L-O-C-C-O, and see all the details. Major Bush fundraisers. Sure, that's right. So just to show you, though, that it goes both ways. There's now these anti-Michael books and anti-Michael websites and even an anti-Michael film. I like this one. You know that Al Franken wrote a book called Rush Limbaugh's a Big Fat Idiot, and Michael Moore wrote a book called Stupid White Men. So a guy is writing a book called Michael Moore is a Big Fat Stupid White Man. I like that. These guys, they can't laugh at themselves, though. I wonder if Michael would laugh at that. They're also making one, Michael Moore Hates America, because if you say that Bush is a crook, if he stole the election, that's also in the film as well, you hate America. And you see the personality here of these conservative fascists. They identify the supreme leader. Doesn't matter that he stole the election. Doesn't matter that he came in second in the popular vote. You criticize the supreme leader, you hate America. Because this abstraction of the country, America, in their twisted psyche, is identified fully with whoever is strong. Remember that guy was saying that America was the greatest country in the world? I was saying Weiss, because we had the strongest military. That's what was going on. All right. You tell me. Peter Werbe at your service, 313-298-WRIF. Call TalkYes at yahoo.com. Already got emails in. We'll read some of those later. Hi, tonight, call, you're on the air. Good evening.
Yes, good evening, Peter. Welcome back. Although I don't get to listen very often. I'm getting too old to stay up on Sunday nights. I haven't seen the movie. My son and my sister saw it, and they were raving how great it was. But I have a good idea why there is such an outburst. For one thing, we have been starved for reality and truth for 3.5 years.
Right.
I think the majority of the country is actually really liberal or at least moderate and sane. And so now that things are leaking out, like the 9/11 Commission and these things, they're going to wander into that movie, and the more they try to stomp it out, then they are wondering. But I find it so incredible how the news media, for example, the Chalabi story, where we turn the guy over, he's great, and we're going to give the country to him, and he's sitting next to Barbara Bush, and then all of a sudden comes out that he gave some code away to Iran, he's a total traitor, and overnight it's gone, and no one even mentions it. You know what I mean? It's like,
well, yeah,
it's so scary. I mean, this guy is obviously a traitor, and we've had him in the White House. Blah blah.
He was sitting with the Bushes with Laura at the State of the Union speech. Yeah, there's a scandal a day. Any one of these Bush scandals that people learned in a European country, the government would collapse. People would be horrified, but they just kind of go on, don't they? All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Hi, it's WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
California is listening.
On the Internet.
Absolutely. Well, you know, the Detroit signal does not get all the way here.
Well, we're working on it. Who's this, by the way?
This is Billy.
Billy.
Yes, sir.
From,
how are you, buddy?
Good. From La La Land.
No, we live up here in Santa Cruz.
Santa Cruz, okay.
Yes.
Hi. Did you see the film?
No, I didn't. But, you know, I have something to say about it, even though.
I can imagine.
You can bet. I heard someone say an interesting thing on the radio the other day, and that is, we shouldn't let a film sway our votes at all. And I thought for a second, I went, no, we should leave that to $200 million worth of 30-second lying commercials.
They do have a lot of money, don't they?
And, I mean, why is the 30-second commercial a better way to communicate to us?
What I want to know, how come the ketchup lady that Carrie's married to, yeah, why didn't she write a check? She's worth $1 billion.
I thought they weren't allowed to.
No, you can't do that? Okay.
You know, something like that. So,
are you going to go see the movie?
You know, of course I'm going to go see the movie, because I want to frighten Republicans and give them a bad night's sleep. I want them to think that they've got a lot to worry about.
Was there a big hoopla in Santa Cruz on Friday, the opening?
I think so. I mean, the assumption is around here that they're selling out, that they're being able to do wall-to-wall right at the moment. So I figured I would wait for a few days and go to a matinee, like in the middle of the week.
Well, you know, at least at the main theater in Royal Oak, a suburb of Detroit here, every showing was sold out.
And that's what I hear is true about New York and, well, frankly, everywhere.
Yeah.
Isn't that great?
That is great.
That's like the ultimate FU to... Wait a minute. Did I just do what Cheney does?
You just did what Dick Cheney did. We're going to talk about that.
Well, that's what I wanted to call about, actually.
Yeah, what hypocrites.
Let me set this up for you in an interesting way.
Okay. Wait. What we should do is set it up. Where is my little sheet on that? Dick Cheney, folks, was arguing with Democratic Senator Patrick Leahy.
It was they were getting their picture taken. It was a class photo.
Yeah, and of course Leahy, among other people, had the temerity to raise the question to the vice president, who's still getting money from Halliburton, which essentially, you know, you realize this is what's happening. We're paying taxes, Billy, and then this no-bid contract.
You mean we, you, me, and Halliburton? Because Halliburton isn't paying taxes.
No, it's...
They're offshored for a lot of their money.
Right, and you remember, you know who set that up offshore?
Well, I assume it's the nasty VP.
Dick Cheney, when he was the CEO of Halliburton, and he's still getting money. So essentially, I think that we ought to stop paying so much taxes and just write a check directly to Dick Cheney. Wouldn't that kind of solve a lot of accounting problems?
You know, the only check we need to write as Americans right now is the one to a special prosecutor to get rid of these bums who sell influence and everything else.
Now,
how about that? Anyway, here's the story for the to further it. And here's how I sort of got to hear it. I was watching C-SPAN.
Yeah.
And they had a lady on who's the on the editorial board of the Washington Post.
Okay.
And her comment was, when asked about the Cheney thing, she said there's no story there. Well, I'll tell you what the story is, Mrs. Post.
Wait. Everybody doesn't know. Let me set it up a little better.
Go ahead. Yes, go ahead.
Dick Cheney said on the floor of the Senate, where language like this is strictly prohibited, even if it's not in session, he said, F off, or F you.
F you. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
There's some debate. And so you would think these conservatives that are always horrified at family values, slippage in morals, and, you know, a little...
Dignity. I'm bringing dignity back to the White House.
What did he say? Actually, I got the quote here. He said, Cheney said, we're going to restore a tone of civility and decency to the debate in Washington. So what have the conservatives said? Should they say that he resigns? Do they say he should be censured? Do they say that he ought to go take a walk around the block instead of presiding over the Senate and then, you know, as his position of president of the Senate? No, all the conservatives are saying, he finally spoke his mind, you know, it's about time and all this. What a pack of hypocrites.
Well, and, you know, the problem I have is, why aren't you being supported by your other media? And here's what I mean. When Washington Post reported the story...
Yeah.
They spelled out the F word. They didn't just go F dot dot or star 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 or, you know, F blank blank K. They spelled it out. They chose to tell the story exactly the way it occurred without, you know, playing any games.
I wonder if they could put
what
that on C-SPAN.
What happens if Peter Werbe does the same thing?
I'm out of here.
Well, why isn't that the story? You know, the same day they passed this law making these fines just so outrageous, everybody voted for him, including the Democrats.
There is Cheney saying F you.
Yeah.
Billy, thank you.
You're welcome, buddy.
Appreciate it. Thanks for calling in from California. Glad to know we're streaming. Hello, Mr. and Mrs. America and all ships at sea. Who said that? Ask your mom or dad or grandparents. Walter Winchell, when he used to broadcast during World War II. Calltalkyes@yahoo.com received this message from Gertie that she went to the premiere of Fahrenheit 9-1-1 at the Great Lakes Mall Stars Theater, and when they were walking in, a security guard in front of the door asked everybody if they had tickets to see the movie. She says, I noticed that none of the other entrances had a security guard in front of them checking for tickets. Now, I don't know if this is just a coincidence or what, but I was wondering, while not trying to sound like a mad conspiracy nut, if other theaters had the same thing going on. I don't know if this can be aired as a topic for people to call in and comment about, but I was just curious. Well, me too, Gertie.
Your opinion matters. Call 313-298-WRIF. Peter will be right back with more Night Call and more of your calls coming up.
Hey, if you've had too much to drink and you're thinking about driving, think again.
We're going to red pickup headed west on Michigan Avenue.
Because this holiday season, you'll see a lot more cops on the road, especially trained cops, looking for one thing only.
Got a possible 5402 southbound on Cedar.
Drunk drivers. Even if you think you're okay to drive, even if you think no one can tell, you will be visible to a trained police officer.
0.13.
And with more cops on the road, lower alcohol limits, and stiffer penalties...
Step out of the car, please.
You're looking at bigger problems than ever.
Okay, I'm going to ask you to take a few sobriety tests.
This holiday season, you better watch out. If you've had even one too many...
Do not get into the car and drive.
You drink, you drive, you lose. A message from the Michigan Office of Highway Safety Planning.
This is another Riff Rock concert.
Just when you thought the party was cooling down, it's about to get
hotter than hell.
VH1 Classic presents Rock the Nation Tour 2004. The Best is back with more pyro.
same night, same stage, you also get Poison.
This Wednesday at 7:30 at DTE Energy Music Theater.
New show, new stage, and bringing you surprises from the entire Kiss catalog. The songs that'll take you back and bring you back again, as only Kiss can. Together with Poison.
Tickets are on sale now at cc.com, palacenet.com, the Palace and DTE Energy Music Theater box offices, and all Ticketmaster locations. Charge at 248-645-6666. Presented by Miller Genuine Grand.
Let me see if this describes you. You're a homeowner, you hate surprises where your money is concerned, and you want a new fixed-rate mortgage with a really low interest rate, 5.5%. Hi, this is Ray Vinson, founder of American Equity Mortgage. If I'm talking about you, then call American Equity Mortgage now and ask about our new mortgages with a low fixed rate. Imagine the savings you'll have with a low American Equity Mortgage, sure thing, fixed rate, 5.5%. At American Equity Mortgage, even with less than perfect credit, a new low interest fixed rate mortgage can save you hundreds of dollars every month. You can roll all those high interest debts and credit cards into one low rate loan with one low monthly payment. Here's another sure thing about American Equity Mortgage. We close fast with no surprises. Call today. 888-229-7699. 5.5%. Low fixed rate mortgages. Call our local office toll free. 888-229-7699.
Call now for a free appraisal. Rates of exchange. APR 6.385.
More Night Call with Peter Werby. Next on The Rim.
Ladies, it's bathing suit season, and if you've started shopping for the perfect suit only to realize that you're not filling it out like you wished you could, well, it's time to call Dr. Gregory Roche. Dr. Roche can help restore your youthful figure with a number of options to enhance your breasts, including breast augmentation or reduction, or a breast lift to give you a fuller look so you can start turning heads again. But most of all, you need to understand how important it is to trust the cosmetic surgeon that you choose. You're hearing more and more about discount procedures from other cosmetic surgeons, but is your appearance really something you want to fool around with? Dr. Roche is someone that can be trusted to give you the absolute best care on your most valued commodity. Visit DrRoche.com today to see the amazing before and after pictures. That's DrRoche.com. Then call 877-338-1110 to schedule a consultation. That's 877-338-1110.
Put your best face and body forward, Dr. Gregory Roche.
At Molson, we understand that there are friends, and there are quote-unquote friends. And since Molson helps guys make the second type of friend, we've created this simple listening exercise to help you tell the difference between the two. Friends come over for dinner.
Smells good. What's cooking?
Hamburgers.
Friends stay over for breakfast.
Smells good. Scrambled eggs.
And my famous sausage.
See? With Molson, it's easy to tell the difference between a friend and a friend. Hone your friend-making skills at the Molson Chiller Beach Party coming to Detroit. It's an anything-goes blowout, complete with everything from DJs to go-go dancers with generous opportunities to meet new friends. While you're there, enter to win a trip to the grand finale Chiller Beach Party in Fort Lauderdale. Molson, making friends since 1786. Imported from Canada by Molson USA, LLC, Golden, Colorado.
The Molson Canadian Chiller Beach Party is coming soon to Metro Detroit. Listen to 101 WRIF for your chance to win.
Kids, eat your vegetables.
Why?
Because they have vitamins that are good for you. Kids, go outside and play.
Why?
Because fresh air is good for you. Parents are always telling kids why something's good for them. Kids, time for bed.
Why?
Because sleeping is good for you.
So don't be surprised when they start telling you.
Mom, don't smoke anymore.
Why?
Because it's not good for us.
Protect your children from secondhand smoke. If you or someone you know smokes, ask them to take it outside. Secondhand smoke can cause bronchitis, pneumonia, ear infections, and asthma in children. So if you're a smoker, don't smoke around people you love. Better yet, quit. Just call 1-800-537-5666 for more information. That's 1-800-537-5666. A message from the Michigan Department of Community Health and the Michigan Association of Broadcasters.
Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Now, more of your comments, questions, and opinions with your host, Peter Werby.
All right, thank you very much. Welcome back. Michael Moore, the boy from Flint. making it big all over the country with his film Fahrenheit 9-1-1, a record number one introduction, even though with all the censorship, only in under 1,000 screens, still comes out number one with almost $22 million in gross. And that ties or just barely beats the entire run of Bowling for Columbine. Steve writes into calltalkyes at yahoo.com. He says he saw it on opening night. My only complaint was that Fahrenheit 9-1-1 is that the information presented about Bush Co. is only the tip of the iceberg. That's not Michael Moore's fault because it would be impossible to pack all of the Bush administration scandals and lies into 2 hours. I wish I could have sat in a chair in front of the screen with a remote control during the movie. I would have paused it about 100 times and said, yeah, and here's what else. He said, I went with two right-wingers and two lefties. One said immediately after the movie, I don't know what to do. I can't vote for Bush like I was going to, but I'm not a Democrat either. He says he considers this a victory after listening to him go on and on in the past 5 years, spouting his ditto head garbage. Well, yeah, I think it could have an effect. So I'm interested in your experiences. Let me just give it away, because I want to, what I was saying, why this is making such a splash. It's because it contains all the arguments that counter the Bush propaganda machine that the mainstream press has been so uncritical of over the last 3.5 years. And a film like this, in a country like Britain or a country like Spain, in which the government supported this unnecessary and illegal war against Iraq and the occupation, it wouldn't have made any impact because all of the information in the Michael Moore film was available daily. If you listen to this broadcast, if you went to my website or 1,000 others, all the information in Fahrenheit 9-1-1 is there. Now, I've seen the trailers of it, and I know Michael's work, and it's going to be presented ironically, humorfully, is that right? In a humorful manner, and all of that. So it's worth seeing. But that information is available in the daily papers of Britain and Spain. Everything about the Bushes and the Saudis, everything about Bush being asleep at the switch for 9-1-1, everything about stealing the election. It was in The Guardian in London, in The Independent, in The Mirror. And then they had papers that supported Bush and Tony Major fully. You go to Spain, El País and other papers routinely put forth every refutation of every Bush co lie. So it's in America where it is left to a filmmaker to say the emperor is naked, he wears no clothes. And what I was saying earlier, that Michael Moore's photograph is on the front cover of USA Today, the problem in this country is that it should be John Kerry. But instead of there being an opposition party, there's simply another party. Now, the Republican Party and the conservatives are so vile and awful. Vile, remember, is also an anagram for evil. That even makes the Democrats and Kerry look good. And so people will say, you know, understandably, I say it, anybody but Bush. But what there needs to be is a resistance, an opposition in this country that doesn't come from a filmmaker from Flint. I mean, Gaia bless, Michael Moore. And I'm going to add to the coffers of the money that the film is pulling in. And I hope that 100 million people see the damn thing. But what it really speaks to, if you look at the issue under the issue, it is that there's not opposition, organized opposition in this country. And as long as we're just sort of these scattered individuals, fragmented individuals, to come together once in a while, well, the people that rule us are going to go along, and once in a while they get caught with their pants down. And Bush has had his pants down for so long, it's easy for him to get caught. Because they're so arrogant that they think, these stupidos that we rule will never catch on to our lies as we give away the country to the ultra-wealthy. All right, your turn. Let's get back to our calls. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, Peter.
Hi.
I saw Fahrenheit 9-1-1, and it was indeed illuminating, provocative, and wrenching.
Really?
Yes. Moore fiercely articulates the frustration and mistrust that many Americans feel for George W. Bush, and Moore, as always, makes no bones about his position. He believes Bush policy has been disastrous and shaped by greed.
Huh. Did what, do you think it could change people's mind, like that one emailer said that he actually went in with a Republican? And
oh, definitely. I do think it could change many people's minds. The movie only played in 868 theaters in the U.S.
Right.
And White Chicks played in about 2,800 theaters, and it still outgrossed that movie. And just imagine how much money that movie would have grossed if it had just the amount of theaters as White Chicks did.
Well, we'll see how deep these ideological commitments are on the part of some of these right-wing theater owners when they see the cash flowing into the other distributors, right, or the other exhibitors, rather.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate your call. 313-298-WRIF. Hi, it's Peter Werbe. You're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, Peter. Can you come next? Can I come next?
Sure. You're on the air right now.
Oh, all right. I'll just let somebody else go. I'm sorry.
What did he say? I missed all that. Where are we going next? All right. Well, in the meantime, while we're... Okay, we can go to that line, sure. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, Pete.
Hi.
Hi, this is Ben from Detroit.
Hi, Ben.
How you doing?
Well, thank you.
That's good. I got a chance to catch the movie last night.
Yeah? What'd you think?
I thought it was just fabulous. There was applause all throughout the movie. People were getting excited, and a lot of people were getting their wrongs righted by what Michael did in this movie. I really appreciated it.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
You know, there's going to be a series of meetings in people's homes around the city tomorrow night, Monday night. You can go to my website, peterwerbe.com, W-E-R-B-E.com, get the locations there, and you can actually talk. Michael's going to be talking to people through an internet hookup, but then people are going to just sit around different living rooms and talk to one another. And, you know, that seems like a pretty odd thing to do. We just don't do that anymore. Most of us just sit in our living rooms and get hypnotized by the boob tube, and you know, we might even yell back at it, but this way it allows us to begin the process of people recreating community so we have some capacity to stand up to the elites that rule us in this society. Very important. Thank you, Ben. Thanks for joining us. Hi, it's WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, Peter. This is Steve from Ypsilanti.
Hi, Steve.
And I seen the movie last night, and I thought it was the most brilliant thing I've ever seen in my life.
Really?
And I've never seen so many people just cheering and carrying on, and it was great. And also, it was kind of interesting, at the kind of end of the movie, Michael Moore's kind of hinting, like, where are we going to get the troops when our troops don't re-enlist? Where are they going to come from?
Yeah.
That's a very scary thing. And they're trying to, they got this bill in Congress to try and, well, they haven't passed it yet, so it's sitting there stating that everyone 18 to 25 will have to serve a year in the civil service. Now, are they waiting until after the elections to do that?
Well, sure. Absolutely. Yeah, see, not sure if they could really try to reinstitute a draft. I mean, they have a bill in the works. There's hundreds of millions of dollars set up for it. They would draft women. All these bills are ready to roll, but there would be such a commotion if people knew that they would stand a chance to go take part in one of these Bush adventures. That
exactly. Yeah. And they don't show it on TV or anything.
I know.
You know, they don't speak about it. They
well,
in the dark, you know?
That's why there's films like Michael's. And
right.
As I said just a few minutes ago, if we had a media worthy of its name or worthy of its task, Michael probably wouldn't even be able to make his film because everything, I'm kind of repeating myself, everything that's in that movie, everybody in England knows, for instance, because they've had to combat it, either exposing it, or if they agreed with Tony Blair, the Prime Minister, they would say, well, I know that, but, you know, they would have an argument to refute it. But the Republicans here, the conservatives here, are deathly afraid that that these arguments will be posed publicly on a large scale, because what happens when both sides are given equal time? Well, we see in England, the majority of English people opposed the Britain's entrance into the Iraq War. Spain was like 90% of the people opposed the war, and finally overthrew by vote the prime minister that had taken the country involved it in this stupid adventure of Bush's in Iraq. Yeah. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Let's see. Joe from Dearborn Heights writes, saw 911 with my brother and another friend Friday night. I was shocked that the theater was actually sold out. We arrived at the Star Theater at Fairlane Mall for a 6:40 showing, and it was sold out, so we headed over to AMC in Livonia, and one of their two showings was sold out as well. I was surprised that there was even commercials for it on TV. A couple of years ago when we saw Bowling for Columbine, the closest theater showing the film was the Main Art in Royal Oak, which is selling it, or showing it rather, has about 10 showings, at least they did on Friday. And there were only a dozen or so people attending. I think all of the hype, pardon me, hype in the news contributes to its widespread popularity. I'm glad people are finally getting the news. He writes, finally old enough to vote. All right, Joe, thank you very much. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, how's it going?
Going well, thanks.
That's good. You know, I'm from Windsor, so I get basically immersed in all of your American media. And I haven't... It's kind of like a joke is being made of the whole thing. You know, I saw the advertisement for this whole thing, and it's, you know, Michael Moore, he's holding hands with George Bush on the cover of, like, the poster of the thing. And,
yeah.
You know, it's kind of a joke when politics in itself is really the joke, because over here we've got our elections coming out tomorrow.
Right.
And, you know, there's a big lack of trust on the part of, you know, the American people with their politicians, because regardless of what they tell you, they're going to do whatever they want anyway. And same with over here in Canada. You know, regardless of who we pick, they're just going to say, okay, we're not going to raise taxes. Well, we got to raise taxes. I'm sorry.
Sure. Well,
just do what they want.
Funny, I was in part of my trip. I was off on vacation. I was in Canada, and boy, Canadian people sure don't like Bush very well.
Yeah, you know what? I understand that what has to be done has to be done, and I dislike politicians on a whole because they're all liars. It's just whoever can put on a best smile, it's a popularity contest, and in all reality, who is the most popular, regardless of whether or not they're most qualified, who is the most popular? You know, these people don't know how to run a country. They deficit spending, you know, they take care of, they're worried about foreign affairs, they're worried about, you know, people on the other side of the world and looking good when they should just be worried about poverty and everything that goes on in our own country and cleaning their own house before they deal with everyone else's crap.
Well, hey, thanks for making our show international, all right?
Hey, you know what? You American guys are all right.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it. Here, Wolf writes in, thank you. The word is, no wonder I couldn't pronounce it. It's humorous. Why was I saying humorful or something like that? Thank you, Wolf. He said he saw the movie with his dad on Saturday. I am 13, believe it or not. So I'm being corrected in my English by a 13-year-old. All right, Wolf, that's cool. Everyone was laughing and cheering at once. It was the largest amount of liberals in one room I have ever seen. There was even a 10-year-old in there laughing at everything. I thought it was R-rated. That was one of the things that they're trying to get rid of. There was a show. In fact, if you go to Michael Moore's website, michaelmoore.com, M-O-O-R-E, michaelmoore.com, they have a photograph of a theater saying they will not enforce the R rating on it. You were either, let's see, I don't think that the movie can sway any votes at this point. You are either for Bush by now or against him. I don't know. Hard to say. I tend to think that this... can have an impact in two ways. Can sway some people. Obviously, the hardcore conservative authoritarian isn't even going to be confronted with this. I mean, won't allow him or herself to be confronted with it. But on the other hand, it may have the capacity to mobilize liberals and people on the left to overcome this feeling that it's hopeless because of the capacity of Bush to steal a second election, either by hook or by crook. Last time was by crook, actually cheated his way into the White House, and this time by hook, whatever the hell that means. But you know, the opposite, by buying it, by creating another crisis. I mean, look for something happening between now and Election Day. Another terrorist attack. I mean, would they allow another one? I mean, they did nothing and allowed September 11th. I mean, for that and no other reason that they should be out of there for misfeasance in office, right? It means you screwed up so totally. Malfeasance means, you know, like you stole money. misfeasance. Well, I guess Bush is stealing money, isn't it? Taking our tax dollar, turning it over to the rich, essentially, Halliburton, Carlyle Group and all that, even giving money to his dad's companies in the Carlyle Group. And we just go, well, you know, what the hell? All right. Thank you, Wolf. We're going to line three. Dan Letarski, thank you for screening our phones. Jay Hudson, our producer here as well on Night Call. Hi, Peter Werby with you. You're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, my name is Kim.
Hi, Kim. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Dearborn Heights.
Well, you're on the air. Go ahead.
I got to go to the midnight showing in Ann Arbor, and there were at least 800 people there, and it was just amazing to see so many people out so late at night. It was just awesome. I think it's about time that we have something mainstream that's not spoon-fed.
Was it kind
nonsense.
Of... Was it, everybody that I've talked to... See, most of my friends went on Friday. I was still on my little island, and on vacation. And let me just say something real quickly, parenthetically. And everybody said, geez, this rich guy's on an island. If I was rich, it would be all right. And a lot of people in show business are. This was not an expensive vacation. All right, so back to that. But everybody said it was, people had different expressions of it. They said it was like going to a peace rally, or it was like going to a rock concert, or... Did you get that feeling?
Yeah, it wasn't the same feel of going to a movie. It was more of an event than just a movie. There were just so many people there and just so much energy. I left there.
Well, I wonder,
very motivated.
I wonder if, one of the things, you go to michaelmoore.com, and he actually has a list of about six or eight things to do, because that's what's important, that we do something after we get motivated. And partly it's hard. Like if you're not hooked up with any movement or group or organization or something like that, you go, what do I do? Well, he even has suggestions for isolated individuals to do. And unfortunately, so many of us are isolated one from the other. And it does feel good. I mean, that's why I like going to demonstrations, for instance. Someone said to me, aren't you a little old to go to demonstrations? But it is exhilarating. When you go to a huge peace demonstration in Washington, and there's 500,000 people there, boy, it is exhilarating. Absolutely. Well, thank you, Kim.
You're welcome. Have a good night.
You too.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby on 101 WRIF Detroit. Peter will be back with another guest right after this.
David, I know you're going to put me back a year as a mortgage expert, but a 30-year fixed interest only loan, what's that all about?
Yeah, actually, you've got your master's from what I understand. 30-year fixed interest only. We rolled out interest only to the general public about 6 or 8 months ago, and it's been wildly popular. The Smart Arm 3-year, 5-year, now 30-year fixed interest only for folks that want to fix in their rate for 30 years and still make those low interest only payments. Who doesn't want a little more cash in your pocket?
That's crazy. I can't imagine that. You'd have so much extra money.
30-year fixed interest only, more cash flow. Do a lot with it. Pay down debt, do some remodeling, maybe save up a little bit of dough so you can go ahead and buy that next home because you're thinking ahead. That's what we do here. We think ahead for you.
You are the Professor Dumbledore of mortgage experts, though. So
never been called that.
I have everybody call you.
Thank you.
At 800-333-ROCK. That's 800-333-ROCK. Or visit them on the web at rockfinancial.com. Rock Financial, a Quicken Loans Company, equal housing lender. And it's David Hall and the mortgage experts you'll be talking to at 800-333-ROCK.
You know what makes Lewis Black angry?
It was unbelievable. There was a Starbucks across from a Starbucks. And if you turn this way and look just at this Starbucks, immediately you think, you know, when I turn around, there cannot possibly be a Starbucks behind me. So you turn slowly, thinking, well, I'll see a Gap or a Denny's. But there's a Starbucks!
Lewis Black's Rules of Enragement Tour.
I knew that the weather in this country was out of control when 10 years ago I was in Boston, Massachusetts, and in 4 days I experienced 5 seasons. On the last day, there was thunder, lightning, and snow. I had it.
Coming Saturday, July 31st to Meadowbrook Music Festival on the campus of Oakland University.
My favorite health club is the International House of Pancakes. Because no matter what you weigh, there will always be someone there who weighs 150 pounds more than you will ever weigh. It's guaranteed it's on the back of the menu. Eat it sometime.
Tickets for Lewis Black are on sale now at palacenet.com, the Palace box office, and all Ticketmaster outlets. Charge by phone at 248-645-6666.
I told you I'm not happy.
the Motor City's best rock station, 101 WRIF, and the best radio website in the world, WRIF.com, brings the hottest deals in the Motor City. Now, WRIF.com makes your night on the town even better without hitting your wallet with Dine Online. You are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price.
Dine Online and eat for less with WRIF.com.
Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants.
Like the Shark Club on Ford Road, just east of Canton Center Road in Canton. You can purchase full-price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price.
But quantities are limited, so hurry and order your half-price certificates now.
Dine Online.
It's all from the station that delivers you more.
101 The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com. Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses.
Like Dr. Roche, put your best face and body forward with help from Dr. Roche.
Log on today and save
with the home of rock and roll
at WRIF.com. Stick around. More Night Call with Peter Werby coming up next.
One Michael Army Center, the ultimate recreational superstore.
Walt has revved up the savings on all Fleetwood motorhomes, travel trailers, and fifth wheels during our NASCAR Summer Open House Sale going on now through June 30th. Now get a 35-foot Mallard two-bedroom travel trailer for just $19,999. Or how about a 34-foot triple-slide Terry fifth wheel rear lounger for just $31,999. Race fans, stop by this Saturday and Sunday and see Jeff Gordon's DuPont race car and get free NASCAR collectibles. Michigan International Speedway will be on-site selling race tickets, too. Plus, register to win NASCAR tickets and pit passes to the August GFS 400 race at MIS. And we'll take the winner racing around MIS in a Walt Michaels RV in front of a 250,000 NASCAR fans. How cool is that? Hurry in, our NASCAR Summer Open House Sale ends Wednesday, June 30th. We're on the North I-94 Service Drive in Belleville. Call 800-697-2500. We'll be looking for you.
Hello, my name is Freddy, the official spokesperson for Sobe. Today I talk to you about new Sobe Courage that tastes like a cherry and a citrus. So when you see it, you will think, oh, so that is what Freddy was talking about. Like when your cousin has a new bike and is talking to you all the time. And then you see it and you are thinking, this is fantastic. So next time you see a shiny label that says, new Sobe Cherry Courage, remember all the things I just told you, so you will be feeling like listening to the radio is not a waste after all. Sobe Courage. Sobe yourself. Sobe want me to tell you about Pictures by Freddy. Look at picturesbyfreddy.com. That is Freddy with a Y, okay?
Rethink what you drink and join the Sobe Lizard Liberation at Rite Aid. All your favorite Sobeys and more, now just two for $2. Look under the cap and you could win a Jeep Wrangler Unlimited. Look for the Sobe display at Rite Aid. For them, it's personal.
101 WRIF Detroit. Call in with your comments at 313-298-WRIF. Now, Night Call returns. Here's Peter Werby.
All right, thank you very much. If you're just joining us, welcome. Guess what we're talking about? Michael Moore's film, Fahrenheit 911, asking you whether you saw the film, what you think about it, whether you think it's going to affect things or not, why there's such a big deal being made about it, and that it should. It finally, what we've been missing in the public dialogue is out there, and the Republicans, the conservatives are hysterical. Just a little insert here. I brought so many other things. Why did I do it? Anyways, you know that that little deal that's sort of the operational manual for this nation? It's called the Constitution. There's a couple amendments to it because the liberals among the founding fathers thought that didn't explicitly say, hey, the government can't clamp down on people, a bunch of other stuff. Said government shall not establish a religion. And which means there's a separation between church and state. Well, besides, maybe you think this is just penty ante, given that we've been robbed of tens of billions of dollars. What's it up to now? About $170 billion were Bush's fool's errand in Iraq. I mean, it's all gone to his pals, of course. All the Halliburton, Cheney's company, and Carlyle Group that made a lot of the weapons, his dad's company. So it's not like it got lost in the wash. Our tax dollars, rather than buying something for us, like a national health program or fixing our cities, stuff like that, went off to his rich buddies. But the Constitution specifically prohibits establishment of religion and doesn't allow the government to spend our tax dollars on religions, on religion. Or, and so here is what's happening. In Iraq, there's a new mosque. It's called the Mosque of the Believers, and it's a holy American undertaking replete with an imam, the priest, who wears a flak jacket and the United States flag on his arm. The army has pumped an estimated $50,000 into reviving the mosque, hiring local Iraqis from the town of Taji to replace wiring, plumbing, doors, like that. So, what's going on here? What is going on here? They're spending our money to build mosques in Iraq. All right. Let me go through a few emails. We've been getting so many emails at calltalkyes@yahoo.com that I can't possibly read them all. Now, I will read them all, but I can't read them all on the air. Jeff writes in, I attended the 6:35 screening of Fahrenheit 9-1-1 at Imagine the Theater in Novi. Our esteemed Governor Grandstand, I like that, Granholm was in the attendance. I overheard her say the movie was deep. All right, well, that's cool. Let's see. Natalie, listening in Ipsy, writes in, tried to go to Ann Arbor's Michigan Theater, but the line was two blocks deep, went to Quality 16, the ACLU was signing up people, the Ann Arbor News took two libs and two conservatives. The responses varied. Two said there was over 60 lies. Two thought it would make a difference in votes. Guess who said what? The difference in response is startling. Are only lefties nodding in recognition? Well, yeah, Natalie, the conservatives, they like to hear the lies. Makes them feel comfortable. Gary says, glad to have you back on the air. I was off for a week and not streaming the week before. I went to Fahrenheit 9-1-1 on opening night in Windsor. While critics will complain that it's one-sided, they missed the point. The film will hopefully reach millions that are new to the fact that more shows. Far from preaching to the choir, this film has the capacity to dramatically alter the course of politics in the U.S. Hopefully enough Canadians will be swayed to not vote conservative in our federal election tomorrow. Okay, moving onward. Our phone screener Dan reminds us that although Sunday or Monday? Sunday. All right. I'm remiss in not noted before it was Gay Pride Day, and so to everyone who supports tolerance and community among all people, a happy Gay Pride Day to all of you. All right. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi. I'm Melissa. I'm calling in. I live about 2 miles north of Great Lakes Crossing Mall.
Mm-hmm.
I went on opening night to see Fahrenheit 9/11, and to answer that girl's question about why they had security there, they do that when they have a massively popular or controversial movie, and later that night when I went after 10 o'clock, there wasn't anyone there checking tickets or anything, but they do that.
Okay, so they're... okay, good.
Yeah, so it wasn't part of a conspiracy. I just wanted to say I went with my boyfriend. We talk a lot about politics and about the lies and everything, and it was really good for me because I haven't trusted Bush the whole time. Anyone who has to buy their way in that high up, you can't trust what they say. I knew him going in after Bin Laden, that was a sham. It just reeked of not trying. And as soon as he turned around saying, oh, let's go get Saddam, I was like, okay, there's the real agenda there. But it was really good because I didn't know a lot of the deeper connections between, you know, the Bush family and a lot of those guys who run the Taliban and everything like that. It was, you know, it was enlightening.
You
that
know,
stuff I didn't know specifically.
I don't, the USA Today, I don't know if you heard me mentioning earlier, that they had a piece in there. Let me see what. They have an editorial. Let me see if I can quickly. Oh yeah, it says it's the movie's suggestion that Bush's closeness to the Saudi royal family has hampered the hunt for Osama bin Laden is ludicrous. So I go, okay. Where's the refutation? That's it. That's all they say. They say it's ludicrous. And yet, if you want, you may have heard, because I interviewed the author, Craig Unger, who I think is interviewed in the film. He wrote the book called, House of Bush, House of Saud. And he documents in this enormous scholarly book the connections between the Bush family and the Saudi royal family. And so it is taken. In fact, this editorial is called A Pair of Provocateurs, where they're talking about Ralph Nader and Michael Moore, that the whole idea that anybody would challenge Bush in such a fundamental way, which I think is completely legitimate, anybody can challenge anybody. Anybody can challenge me, but usually what is said is, you know, it almost amounts to how dare they impugn the integrity of, the president and all that. Yeah. Forget that.
Yeah. Which is funny. They like to call people who question the government unpatriotic, but, you know, our country was founded on people being sick of one organization, one government telling everybody else what to do, whether it was good for them or not. And that's why we revolted against that, started our own country based on our own ideals, and it's that vision has been lost.
Yeah, and we're back. Just like then, these colonies were ruled by the East Indian... I can't remember what it's called. The East India something or other company. This was just a little place for this corporation to loot, essentially. And that's what's happening again. I mean, we're back to, at best, the 19th century and maybe even the 18th century, where wealth rules. There's democratic rule. Forget it. It's like a bad joke. It's wealth in power. And that means that it's going to operate for the wealthy, for the elite, and it's to the detriment of the middle class and the working class. So we got to do something. Thank you, Melissa.
Okay.
Appreciate it. Thanks for calling in. Lar and Sue in Westland, right? Glad to see you back. Seeing those bastards on the right have done everything in their power to censor Michael Moore, couldn't someone with some influence, say a talk show host such as yourself, get in touch with the Moore camp and thumb our noses at the corporate-owned right-wing media by sporting bumper stickers, Fahrenheit 9-1-1, the movie they didn't want you to see? Please consider the idea. I would volunteer to do all this. Yeah. Well, I know Michael. He used to edit a paper called The Flint Voice and what have you. And, boy, that's not a bad idea. I wonder if there are any bumper stickers. But in a way, Lauren Sue, if you think about it, bumper stickers almost aren't needed. If it's on the front page of USA Today, if it's being talked about by every talk show in America, and I'd be interested to, I can't take it, to these professional liars, you know, Rush and Sean Hannity and those people, they are also going to just be talking endlessly, and Moore's a liar, and he's not patriotic, and he's twisting the facts. And by the way, Michael Moore, maybe everybody knows this, I think this was in the news accounts, he has set up this war room where he will challenge, or he will take on any challenge to his facts. Because I've seen some already. And the challenge are interesting. The challenges to Michael Moore's contentions are interesting. And when I see that, these right-wingers, these authoritarians, they don't like challenges to their ideas. In fact, they a lot of them, you start getting really down towards the ragged right, which is a good portion of them. They like to put people in jail that disagree with the leader or the rulers. But people with a democratic spirit, small d, people that have a democratic personality, generous, tolerant, open, inquisitive, the opposite of everyone who's ruling us now. When you say, I believe da 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 da, and someone says, you know, that's not true, actually the opposite is, and here is my arguments, you don't get mad. You don't get thinking this person should be put away, their film or book should be censored, we ought to set up some camps for these people. You go, huh, let me think about this. Because what I'm interested in is not the solidity of the view I hold, which is invariable, can never change, and can accept no challenges to it. Rather, what a democratic personality is interested in. And when I say personality, I mean a personality structure, who you are as a person. You welcome that because you think, ooh, I might be wrong. I better think about that because I can change my mind very easily. These authoritarians, never. No. Hard as steel, cold as steel. And in other words, people that are not proper material for a democratic society. All right. 313-298-WRIF. The show is Night Call. I'm Peter Werby, and hi, you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi. First, I have a couple of quick things I want to say. One, all this talk of, you know, being unpatriotic for questioning, you know, a person's of authority, I think is completely asinine because it's your fundamental right as an American citizen to do so. You know, being patriotic would be questioning that and, you know, wanting to make things right. And second of all, I saw the movie on Friday, and the part that got me the most about it was, you know, the footage in the movie of the wars that you don't see. You know, like, I have a brother in the Marine Corps, and, you know, you see this footage of Marines with their legs blown off and kids, 20-year-old kids coming home in boxes for a completely, you know, unjustified war and illegal war, as you said before.
Well, you must be really worried.
Absolutely. I mean, absolutely, you know. I mean, it's you know, it almost enrages you, you know, the fact that, you know, it can be completely unjustified and for their own, you know, twisted reasons. And they, you know, let's set aside Halliburton and Carlisle and all the financial problems and the reasons. You know, let's think about the human lives and the kids coming home in bags, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Now, also, as you may know, there's this Marine has been held captive now, was captured.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And they're threatening to execute him. Now, this, to many people, shows the total character of Arab people, I mean, which is kind of nuts because some of them are supposed to be our allies, right? But if you think about it, one of the things they said about this Paul Johnson who was beheaded, they said they were going to do to him what had been done to prisoners at Abu Ghraib. So they didn't just humiliate him, they actually executed him. But the United States, as we learn now, has authorized all sorts of torturous, I don't say torturous, torture of prisoners, and there is investigations of the United States troops and these mercenaries that we're paying out of our tax dollars of killing up towards 140 prisoners.
Mm-hmm.
So by Bush's action in allowing torture, in authorizing torture, by allowing people to be beaten to death, essentially, by humiliated and all these other acts, has set at risk every American in a war zone.
Oh, absolutely, and every, you know, not only every American, but every ally of American, you know, the North Korean that they just cut his head off, and the other American contractor that was there, and they killed, you know, I mean, it just shows the complete lack of regard for human life that this administration has. You know, I mean, they're out for their own interests, and, you know, so be it. If Marines get killed and, you know, our allies get killed, then it's, you know, they don't care. It's just, you know, their own agenda.
Well, I hope your brother comes home safely.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye. Damn, sometimes, I don't know, I try not to be angry. Sometimes, you know, if you see me getting angry or hear me ever getting angry, you know, it's sometimes to push away tears, really. I mean, to think of what's happened to the people of Iraq, what's happened to the soldiers that are over there, all of us, for these people in the Bush administration that always have ruined everything. During the Reagan administration, during Bush 1, always this bloody trail of peasants, of poor people, of American soldiers, all for all for their schemes of wealth and power. And partly is they're just a pack of psychos because they've got so much damn power and wealth already. But then they're always thinking, how can they expand this, right? By the way, the Carlyle Group, which I mentioned from time to time, that has as part of its structure George Bush Sr., who always comes, oh, I'm not part of that. But it's this big conglomerate that owns weapons manufacturers. They also own, and that's mostly what they're known for. And so that's what I'm always saying. It's this perfectly symmetrical racket. That's why I call it Bush Co., Bush Incorporated, is that Bush's daddy's buddies make the weapons of war to destroy Iraq, and then Cheney's buddies, which are also Bush's buddies, get all this public funding through Halliburton and what have you to rebuild it, right? In the meantime, we get none of it. It just disappears from our paycheck. Americans get paid piss poor anyways, right, given the levels of other Western industrial countries. And we get squat back in terms of what the government programs because it's all going off to the war machine and the other part of the war machine rebuilding over to the wealthy elites who are Bush and Cheney's friends. Where was I? Anyway, so the Carlyle Group, and Carlyle is spelled, if you want to Google it, C-A-R-L-Y-L-E, Carlyle, right? So they have just now bought the Star Theaters. This is thank you to Eric for this. Onyx to sell Lowe's Cineplex to Investor Group for $82 billion. $82 billion. Write a check. Right? Carlyle and Spectrum Equity to purchase Lowe's. So Carlyle now, this is another thing. They're buying up all these publishing houses, newspapers, and what have you. Because one of the things that you need, now, who was it? Thomas Jefferson. That's right. Thomas Jefferson said, one of the many values of a democratic society is that if all countries were democratic, there wouldn't be any wars. Because it's only leaders that bring you off to war for grand schemes of whatever. Yeah. Why? I could go on too long about that. All right. Well, thank you for that information here. Let me see. Maybe I can read one more email. Ooh, this one's too long. Let's go back to our phones. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, Peter.
Hi.
I agree with Howard Stern. This is the most, possibly the most important movie of our lifetime. And, you know, Mr. Stern was a Reagan Democrat. And
supported Bush, voted for Bush, and supported the war against Iraq. But all of a sudden, he's turned against him.
Because Michael Powell and them were trying to get him off the air.
Yeah. But now, how come Cheney can say, F off, and I can't say it on the air? He can say it on the on the floor of the Senate, this august body where such language is prohibited. And, Howard talks about anal intercourse and was on the verge of being shoved off the air.
Well, you know, as far as the movie goes, Peter, I'm going to go see it again, but I missed the very beginning of the movie where they were showing about the election. So maybe after I hang up, you can fill us in on exactly what was talked about there.
I didn't see it. I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, you haven't?
No.
Oh, okay.
The
part of the movie that just made my blood boil is that he shows this gathering of businessmen, of these smaller people that wanted to get in on the contracts of Iraq.
Yeah.
These are rich men. They're just smaller than Halliburton. And this guy's up behind the podium saying, there is a pot of money out there. This is unprecedented. It's out there for the grabbing. And the American taxpayer is footing the bill. But they're, like, excited about this war profiteering that they're going to engage in.
Sure. Do you have computer access?
Yes, I do.
All right. Here you can go to a website. It's a man's name, Greg Palast. It's Greg, and the last name is P-A-L-A-S-T, like Pa-last, Palast. GregPalast.com. He's written a number of books about the theft of the 2000 election. Now, what I was saying earlier, I don't know if you caught that all of the information in Michael's film has been out there since day one. And again, I'm not trying to take anything away from a skillful filmmaker and someone who has actually used his position in society to bring this all forth. However, if American media would have been doing its job, there would have been nothing for Michael to make a film of, because we would have known all of this every minute that it happened. Just like the people in Britain knew every aspect of the information in his film. It might not have been as funny and as ironic and from everything that I've heard about it. But Greg Palast, for instance, is an American that was an investigative reporter that was forced to work in England for years because he couldn't get anybody in America to print his stuff, because he was saying things and actually demonstrating the method by which the Bush campaign stole the election, suppressed votes, tampered with stuff, all of that.
Well, I first heard about Jeb Bush and Catherine Harris's bogus felon purge,
right,
not from any American media. I read it in the BBC, and then I read, of course, Greg Palast's articles on it. But I actually,
you know this stuff then.
Oh yeah, but you had to find this out overseas before you ever heard it here in any mainstream media.
Well, sure.
And But the other one is, remember when Bush, they claimed that Gore was trying to purge military votes?
Yeah.
The truth is that 638 illegal overseas ballots with no postmarks, nothing, were counted for Bush in violation of Florida law.
Right.
And, of course, they don't, Limbaugh and Hannity and these people, they don't tell you this stuff, but thank goodness somebody like Michael Moore and yourself are.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Peter.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Let's see, Molly, I can't say that on the air. Anyways, she says this isn't the subject line. F. Bush, I guess. Hey! If Dick Cheney can say it, why can't I? What the hell's going on here? Anyways, why can't? Let me say it. No, I didn't say it. It almost sounded like it, didn't it? It was like an F and a K there, but I didn't say the middle letter. So, anyways, Molly says, I skipped out of work early on Friday to see Fahrenheit 9-1-1 at the Main Art Theater in Royal Oak. The theater was about three-quarters full, which was pretty impressive for 2:30 on a weekday afternoon. The movie was overwhelming and at times painful to watch. I don't want to give anything away. Suffice it to say that the most painful part to watch was the coverage of the 2000 election. I remember how surreal it was to watch the election coverage that night and how, after almost 4 years of Bush, it's all more horrible. Molly says, I plan on seeing the movie as many times as I can get people to see it with me. I'm grateful to Michael Moore and to you for having the balls to say what needs to be said and heard. All right, Molly, thank you so much. F. Bush. I mean, I can say it now, right? Cheney has set the tone. We're going to line three. Line two. All right. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Hi.
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 I was just, I haven't seen the movie Fahrenheit 9-1-1 yet, but I am 18, and the one thing that really makes me nervous is how that the draft can go through at any time.
Uh-huh.
And just to know that all the soldiers over there are getting killed and knowing that I could be next and, you know, I think everybody that's all about old Bush isn't a bad guy and blah, blah, blah. Well, he got himself into it. And what people say about him, he mm-hmm. deserves everything.
Well, I'll tell you how you can kind of get an idea of how much people support a war. As long as everyone is watching it from the sidelines, like Bush and all his pals managed to scam out of actually fighting in Vietnam because they supported the war, but they made sure that they didn't actually have to fight it. They didn't want to come home in a body bag or anything like that. And here you get different amounts of support for the war. The majority of people now think it's a mistake. It took folks a long time, but they finally got around to it. If there was a draft, and people had to go off to fight in Iraq, the support would probably drop down to about 20% of the people. The true nuts, the core support of Bush, the real psychos, some of the people that can be fooled all the time because they want to be fooled in Lincoln's dictum. But as long as people can just kind of go for the sidelines, say, yeah, I support Bush, we got to stop whoever. Oh, now it's this new guy. What is it? Zakawi. Al-Zarqawi, yeah, Al-Zarqawi. All of a sudden, I'd been away for like a week, hadn't seen any television, I was on vacation, and all of a sudden, Al-Zarqawi is like that, and I go, oh yeah, now they're ramping it up, it's another one of these figures, faces they're going to put on the telly, like in 1984, when they used to put Goldstein's photo every other day. Anyways, point being, if there was a draft, or they tried to institute a draft, support for these wars would probably plummet off to nothing.
Yeah.
So if they try to do it, my advice is you better get politically involved or you may wind up unwillingly in a uniform. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Hi, Night Call. You're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, thanks, Peter. Just want to make a couple comments. One about the movie. The biggest thing I got out of it was when Michael Moore was talking about the amount of money that the Saudi businessmen have invested in our economy.
Uh-huh.
And if they were to pull this money out, like it was like $1 trillion, I think is what they said, and they own about 6 or 7% of our country, you know, the economy, that would cause like massive, problems for our economy, almost like in Great Depression numbers, you know. I was wondering if you could make some comments on that. And I also want to make a comment on if you've been watching any of the interviews with Ron Reagan Jr., you know, the president's son, just what you have to say about him. I didn't realize being from a Republican family, he's so well-spoken against the Republican, the whole regime of Bush and Bushko, as you put it. I just wanted to make some comments about him. I'm very impressed with his whole stance from everything from, you know, abortion and stem cell research all the way up through the war and everything. So,
well, I'll tell you, in many ways, there's not much more I can say after what you've said. He has another son, Michael Reagan, who's a far right wing conservative talk show host.
I was familiar with him. He had a radio show, but I wasn't sure what exactly is Ron Reagan doing. Is he having shows out there or anything, or
you know,
on the radio, or
I actually don't know. And you know, there's some dispute about the impact of Saudi investment in this country. Obviously, there is such heavy foreign investment. And now, when Bush has driven us into debt, the country had a surplus. When Bush came in, he gave away the store, and now we're a debtor nation. So where do we get money from? Well, we have to borrow money. So when when we look at our paychecks, and a portion of that goes for debt service, to much of it to foreign, and actually, I don't know what percentage, but at least a percentage of it goes to foreign investors. And how much of that is Saudi investment? I don't know. One of the things is that no one's going to call in the chips on the United States because that could lead to a worldwide economic collapse. So we can keep kind of bullying our way along, because we're the big dog, the huge dog on the block. So that's why, for instance, even though probably most of these European Union countries would like to tell the United States to shove it, they're willing to at least give a little bit in terms of they're going to train a few Iraqi soldiers. I forgot who it was, though. I think it was Senator Biden was saying today that it's an illusion to think that these Iraqis that are so-called trained to protect the country are in any position to do so. And apparently, any number of them are using their training and going back and shooting our troops.
Right.
Yeah. All right, thank you.
Hey, thank you.
Appreciate your call. Hey, we'll be right back. Hang on.
Your opportunity to take control of the WRIF playlist with the guy who lost control a long time ago.
Call in your riff, rock, and roll requests to Meltdown at 313-298-WRIF or email them to meltdown@wrif.com.
The Rippin' Rock at 9 o'clock
with Meltdown.
He's in big trouble.
101.
W-R-I-F. Rocks.
Hello.
How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
The King of Pop also habitually gulped down soda cans of wine, particularly when he's on airplanes. On a flight to Frankfurt in 1999, for example, his former business advisor, Ming Ho Lee, had to help the staggering Jackson stand up to get off the plane.
Can't you imagine him just, when he's so wasted like that, him just coming out and saying, somebody, you mean a 12-year-old boy? the kid in 93... I did it.
We finished on the Jackson story where Jackson got his genitals photographed. And I told you, Michael slapped the doctor.
I think he thought the doctor was getting a little too grab-baggy over everything. And the doctor was too old.
Now
they'd had a 12-year-old in there. Yeah. They'd had Doogie Howser. If Doogie Howser, M.D., was doing the work, Michael Jackson would have never had a problem with that.
Drew.
That sounds good.
And Mike.
I hear you.
In the morning.
Each of us has to set his own standards, I guess.
On the Rift.
That's good.
101. W-R-I-F.
Ow, you're shouting at me.
WRIF.com.
American people have a right to know.
When you need it loud. When you need it hard. You need the Riff's Midnight Metal. Tuesday through Thursday nights on the Riff. Join Screamin' Scott Randall for the loudest hour on your radio.
That's what this is all about.
Midnight Metal. Midnight Metal on the Riff. Call in your heavier-than-hell request at 313-298-WRIF. WRIF. You can also fax in or email for requests and your chance to win killer wrist swag.
Send your faxes to 248-398-6219 or email screaming at WRIF.com.
Get your fix of the heaviest 60 minutes in the Motor City. It's Midnight Metal.
Is America a better place to live because of our efforts?
Tuesday through Thursday nights with Screaming Sky.
From your home for Midnight Metal, the home of rock and roll. 101. The Riff.
The Emerald Ball.
The Emerald Ball.
The Emerald Ball. Kick your club life into overdrive. Jumpstart your weekend at the Emerald. The Emerald Ballroom in downtown Mount Clemens, where sight and sound are combined to thrill your senses in one of the most unique rooms in the Motor City. This Friday night, join 101 WRIF along with DJ Rubik's Cube with over 1,000 partygoers and see for yourself why the Emerald Ballroom stands out above the rest. From the VIP lofts overlooking their spacious dance floor to the rock room and the numerous watery grottos in between. Cover the room in style Friday nights at the Emerald Ballroom with 101 WRIF. The Emerald Ballroom, 31 North Walnut Street, downtown Mount Clemens. It's Detroit's biggest Friday night dance party.
The Emerald Ballroom.
With the station where the weekend never ends.
Riff rocks.
Andy Warhol? Kind of Warhol's 1960s. I think it's pretty good. Now, Isaac in Detroit challenges me. He says, I'm a left-winger, but not to the extent that you are. Nobody is a left-winger to the extent I am. I am the most left-wing. I'm only kidding. Driving home tonight, he took issues with two things he said. You said that Bush was... Well, he says, Bush is not responsible for 9-1-1. You said Bush allowed 9-1-1 to happen. Not true. You know, Isaac, you just can't say, I mean, well, you're doing what I did. I have to be honest. I was going to say, you just can't assert things. I asserted things. You didn't. So I am actually the one that has the burden of proof on me. Suffice it to say is that Bush Co. totally ignored the threats, the warnings, all of the intelligence information from around the world, the memo that he got, that Ashcroft and his on September 10th put in a... he was told we need more interpreters of Arabic and all this stuff. Completely ignored all this. So it's what Al Franken calls Operation Ignore. What's his name? Richard Clark said, look, you've got to set in motion an anti-terrorism program. Bush Co. did nothing. Absolutely nothing. Now, you can be as cynical as me, and if you said you're not as far left as I am. So as far left as I am, I would say that they left the United States vulnerable, not in any way thinking that there was going to be 3,000 dead and that the towers were going to collapse. I mean, even the wacko terrorists couldn't have believed that was going to happen. But this was going to be the go-ahead to do what they had already planned in advance, and that is to invade and occupy Afghanistan, pardon me, and to invade and occupy Iraq. This will all come out. More has come out. Usually you got to wait 20 and 30 years. I used to say, you know, a lot of you who are 20 now, when you're like 55 and 60, you'll be going, yeah, I remember a guy back in Detroit, back in the first part of the century, who was him. But now it's coming out right away. So, at best, it was misfeasance, that they dropped the ball. They allowed it to happen in the sense that every indication that a major terrorist strike was coming was there, and they did absolutely nothing about it. They closed the barn door after the horse had gotten out. Now, also, he says, let me see to your credit, you need to mention the questionable points about the film. It said, for example, U.S. did not go to war in Afghanistan so that a pipeline could be built. You know, you got to really read into this stuff a little deeply. There is this whole complex, I mean, the reason I'm kind of hesitating here, it is very complex in all of these machinations with wanting to control oil, the pipelines, deliver it, That does play a big role in it. And just to say it doesn't deal with the question. And he says, secondly, Moore omitted a congressman's reply about a family member serving in Iraq. Maybe he did. Maybe he did. But why do people, think about this, Isaac. Why are people nitpicking Michael Moore's film, parsing every word, every sentence, every contention, well, in a sense, well, they should, but never doing this to Bush? Why didn't they do it about his lying State of the Union speech? Why didn't MSNBC and USA Today, that wants to take apart every contention? By the way, a lot of the contention, they just say, that's not true, and not in any way refuting the evidence that Michael Moore presents. Why haven't they looked at every lie that that Colin Powell and Condoleezza Rice and Donald Rumsfeld, all the rest of them, have told that have cost the lives of tens of thousands of people? Huh? You know, they're great. They're great at doing Michael Moore, who is a filmmaker from Flint, whereas the most powerful politicians and war makers are in the country get away pretty much unscathed until Michael Moore comes along. That's my question. All right, going back to our phones. Hi, it's Nate calling. You're on the air. It's Peter Werby. Hi.
Hi. I wanted to ask your opinion on Bill O'Reilly. I think he's a self-opinionated a-hole.
Yes.
But the movie Fahrenheit 9-1-1 has really got his blood boiling. But I just wanted to know what you thought of him, because if you don't agree with him, you can't call his show because of either you'll place on hold or hang up.
Sure.
When you have your own opinion, it has to be along the side of his, or you know, he doesn't want to hear it. So I just wanted to know what you thought of him.
Well, I mean, I think you summarized it. The answer is in the question. And those shows are worthless. They're just sort of propagandists for the right wing. And, I mean, I don't tell you the truth. I don't know why you'd even bother listening to him.
Right. I just have the radio on at night when I'm at work. And but he irritates me a lot. And you know, a lot of people that I work with is just... Yeah, it's to keep me aware of what's going on, you know, in the world, to the negative side.
Well, wait, you know, people always say that. I mean, they say I listen to Rush Limbaugh every day, and I say sometimes I can listen to it for 5 minutes, but usually the stream of lies and mis and disinformation is so constant that it sends me over the edge. The idea of sitting there passively, unable to respond for 3 hours would drive me directly out of my mind. And also, that since every clause that somebody like Hannity or Limbaugh or O'Reilly says is a lie, it would take you or me like half an hour to refute one clause. So, and people often say to me, well, gee, the reason I listen to these guys is I want to know what the other side is saying. And I was just listening to a tape of, modern... you know, technology, CD, of Al Franken's Lies in the Lying Liars Who Tell Them. And I was thinking, how does this man have the fortitude to listen to all this? Well, I don't listen to these guys at all. And as I say, things like watching television news. And I don't listen to television news at all. It would never occur to me if I did watch television news to ever listen to, like, Foxhole News. And yet, I would think, even if people disagree with me, I guess they would think I have a passing acquaintance with information, the news of the day, and also what right wingers are saying.
Right.
So it's a worthless waste of time. I mean, I would get a headset and you know, listen to some music. All right, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Is there another email? Oh, everybody is going now. They all want to say F Republicans. I mean, Dick Cheney said it. F off, Senator Leahy, and all the Republicans. These are the guys that went crazy because of Janet Jackson's tit, right? What is up with that? I don't understand what this means, Keith. Bush loves Michael Moore. Don't know. Okay. I wrote it down. I said I knew it. Oh, yeah. Okay. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, how are you doing, Peter?
Doing well, thanks.
I saw the film this weekend, and I really liked it. But one thing that I thought was kind of odd that was missing from the discussion of the causes of the Iraq War was the connection between the architects of the war and the Israeli right. I mean, there was a lot of mention of, you know, Halliburton interest and Saudi interest. And you could certainly make the case that the Iraq War was not in the Saudis' interest because it served to destabilize their country. And after the war, I think the favorable opinion of the United States is like 3% in Saudi Arabia. For us to, you know, so for them to be tied so closely to us, it kind of destabilizes the Saudi regime. But at the same time, it, you know, you could argue that Iraq posed a security risk to Israel, even though they never necessarily posed one to us.
Well, the Saudis had little choice in this either way, either in the first Gulf War or the second war. I mean,
I think it kind of shows the, I mean, it's more complex than saying the Saudis call all the shots.
Oh, I don't think they do.
Yeah. I think in certain cases, like getting people out of the country who should have been investigated after 9/11, that's a favor that they could do for them. And then you have other interests like, you know, Richard Pearl and Douglas Feith, who were advising Benjamin Netanyahu and had this plan on the shelf for years.
Sure.
And advising him to do things like, you know, take over the occupied territories and stuff like that. You know, and then they're playing George Bush, who probably really just wants to do better than his dad and get the guy who killed his dad. So it's kind of interesting how all these things play off of one another, and it's kind of sad that absent from the decision calculus altogether is what's in the best interest of the American people, what's in the best interest of the Iraqi people.
Sure. Well, I've mentioned this before, but Doug Feith's brother, in fact, Doug Feith is a member of a Jerusalem-based law firm, a partner of whom is Salim Chalabi, the cousin of the now disgrace. I mean, who is
either UN ambassador too?
Who?
Something.
I don't. You know, it is such a labyrinth of corruption and vile self-interest as a for the wealthy, as opposed to, you know, really trying to do something for the good of the country in which you live, that you almost can never find it. In fact, some of these things I find myself backing off of, because you start, you know, going down the rabbit hole. There are conspiracies out there, and yet you can get lost in that. I usually say to people, you can go to the front page of the Detroit News or the New York Times and find all the scandal you need. You don't have to start finding out all this stuff. But when you find out how interconnected they all are, and how they're all seeking an interest of the elites of the country of which they represent, I mean, it should be a wake-up call to people. All right, thank you.
Yep.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much. James in Kenosha, Wisconsin. He's listening on the Internet, and he wrote to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Sorry I missed the show tonight. Well, we're still doing it, James. But I just returned from my third trip to see Fahrenheit 911 and handing out leaflets from 911truth.org to people leaving the show. Very good idea. 911truth.org. You can also go to my website, peterwerby.com. Click on that newspaper that says Bush New. How the hell that ever got into the pipeline? But it's some right-wing paper, and it's essentially saying that he knew that stuff was coming down the pipeline and didn't do anything. James says, this is the third time I've done it. I've handed out hundreds of flyers and have heard nothing but thank you in response. I'll be in Milwaukee tomorrow at a this was beginning to be called F-911 house party, and we'll be going back again to the local theater for more flyers. We'll have to catch the show from the White Rose Archive. Yeah, you're going to have to do that, because apparently radiopower.org is off. Radiopower.org is off. Off the air. That's a long story. If you don't know what it's all about, I'm not going to go into it. But let me get to... I always give the wrong address. Yeah, it's WhiteRoseSociety.org. WhiteRoseSociety.org. You can hear the show repeated again. All right. Let's go back to our phones. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Good evening, Peter.
Hi.
Hi, this is Kim calling from Dearborn Heights.
Hi, Kim.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I enjoy your show.
Kim, did you call before?
No, there was another Kim from Dearborn Heights.
Yeah, your voice sounds different.
Yeah, there was another Kim from Dearborn Heights.
Wow, that's weird.
I think I'm older.
Okay.
I did see the film Friday, and I really feel we owe a debt of gratitude to Michael Moore for taking this on. I think for me, the overarching, the thing that just drives me crazy is this use of religiosity that this administration employs. You know, for lack of a better expression, I mean, they are a bunch of wolves in sheep's clothing.
Yeah, they're phonies, too.
Yeah, they're completely. And so many people are just, they just buy it. And I guess, you know, what I've been thinking about since seeing the film, nothing new was revealed. I mean, I think most of us follow the press really carefully, the international press. But, you know, I was reflecting on how this and The Passion were like the two big films this year. And quite frankly, you know, I'm a religious studies person. Theologically, I think there was far more of The Passion in Michael Moore's film.
Huh.
You know, I think that the scene of the woman from Iraq, devastated after her house had been bombed, you know, the mother from Flint, I mean, that's real passion. And I just, you know, I think more than anything, that's what drives me crazy, this fundamentalist, right-wing, you know, a nuclear weapon in one hand and the Bible in the other. I don't get it. We've got nuns sitting in jail right now.
Yeah,
protesting weapons.
Well, we're talking, I mean, I was always a little hesitant to call people fascists. But, yeah, apparently I was reading from this book by Tom Hartman, which is available at tomhartman.com, called We the People, where, I mean, I think fascist is absolutely appropriate.
I do, too.
Yeah. All right, thank you.
I do, too. Thank you.
Bye. Thanks for joining us. Let's see, Dave in Detroit writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. He says, Bush has certainly turned back the clock, but given nickel and dimed, this is a book by Barbara Ehrenreich, which I would highly recommend. That's me talking. Dave says, I think he's turned it back further than you suggest. People are working hard to enrich the corporations, but not getting ahead themselves. We had that information earlier that, in fact, our incomes have slipped again by about 0.5% over the last year. The wealthy, on the other hand, wealth has expanded. We, labor, create wealth by our work, and then it's a question of how it's divvied up. Well, the wealthy, which controls this society now, so it's a plutocracy. It's the rule of the rich. It's not a democratic society. It's not a representative republic or whatever, like you know, formally it's supposed to be, but rather the elite wealthy and the corporations control things. Part of the definitions of fascism that now we're making less than we did. And this is socially engineered. This is class warfare, folks. Those nutball Republicans that anytime you want to dime more an hour, they say that's class warfare. That's not class warfare. We should be practicing class warfare because, you know, defensively, because that's what's being practiced against us by the rich and powerful. However, we just ain't doing it. We're too nice, or we're too slow, or we're too unorganized, or whatever. So seeing no opposition seeing no opposition on our part, they just continue the looting apace. What do they care? Anyways, where's Dave here? He says it's a return to feudalism. So between the Wahhabis, the right-wing Islamists, and the fascists, there is a race to see who can set the world back farther and faster. I wonder who will win. Well, that's scary, isn't it? All right, another call here. Remember, in about just a few minutes, we're going to be playing an interview with Carl Pope from the Sierra Club talking about... See, we talk about all this stuff about the war so much and the looting of the economy. Also, there is warfare against the environment that has unraveled perhaps 100 years of environmental progress by the Bush administration. Hi, it's Night Call. You're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, I'm loving your show. This is Evan from Ann Arbor.
Okay.
And I'm just wanting to say that there's another good movie out this weekend that I saw.
The Corporation.
It was Control Room.
Oh, The Control Room, yeah, about Al Jazeera.
Yeah, and I was just wondering what your take on that was, and maybe what your take on just Al Jazeera and their coverage, and how you think maybe it compares to the coverage that we got here.
Oh, boy. I mean, in some ways, I don't even really feel qualified to say. I mean, if you've seen The Control Room, you probably know more about Al Jazeera than I do. It certainly seems that they are willing to bring to public view a lot of stuff that the American media has, but the American media has been so slow and so reluctant to bring very much. So, I mean, it's hard to find something worse. I mean, when George Bush calls some media outlet a propagandist, I always think they must be on to something.
Yeah, well, it was also interesting to see that they're getting called propagandists by both sides for the other side.
But you must be doing something right if that's the case.
Yeah, and then just, you know, I just thought I'd call you up and think, because it's kind of a shame that it's sort of getting overshadowed.
Well, yeah.
By Fahrenheit 9/11, it sort of seems like maybe they should have come out at different times, but...
There's another one. What is it called? Is it, all of a sudden I'm losing it. Is it The Corporation? Is that the name of it?
Control Room.
No. There's another one. There's another one yet. All right.
I'm
supposed to do some publicity with it, so I better find out by next week.
Yeah.
Thank you, Kevin. All right. Yeah. Bye now. Time for a couple more calls. Hi, WRIF. You're on the air. Good evening.
Hello, Peter. This is Roy down in New Mexico. How you doing?
Roy, down in New Mexico. How are you?
Oh, any better, I'd be twins. You know, being an old gray beard like you, and your audience being quite a bit younger than us, overall, I would like to urge them to get on and find a house party to go to tomorrow night.
Well, let's remind people, though, Roy, we're not just talking about a house party where people are going to drink, but this is through MoveOn.org, where people are going to be discussing the film. And so far, there's at least 2,000 house parties being hosted across the United States.
We've been doing it down here in our little community, and it is so invigorating. Number one, it's just great to know that we're not out here by ourselves.
Sure.
And just getting the feedback and coming up with game plans. We've got some voter registration stuff going. We put in a big order for some yards. You know, I mean, there's lots of things that can be done. There's strengths in numbers. And this is just going back to the basic ground roots organizing. And we'd love to have more young folks. They're the ones that are going to be paying for this. Their kids are going to be paying for it. And so I'd just like to urge them to turn out for it. And I'd like to make a couple quick comments about the movie itself. I haven't seen it yet. It has actually got two things that I did not know. I understand that Michael Moore and Unger, the guy that wrote House of Sod, House of Bush,
Craig Unger, yeah,
were actually interrogated by or interrupted by this Secret Service when they were chatting across the street from the Saudi embassy. They came up and quizzed them on what were they doing there. And I would like to add, maybe I want to find out, but the name of the other guy that got grounded the same time that Bush did in the Air Texas National Guard thing,
mm-hmm.
I understand that Moore had it was unredacted, and his name was Bass. And, of course, the Bass brothers and the Bass boys are the big financiers in Texas. Now, I think I heard that, but I haven't been able to confirm that. But there'll be so many things that come up that people that have followed it will be reminded of things that they had forgotten. It was like when I watched the movie Uncovered, the whole war about the Iraq War, the CD that Move On and Truth Out and all that came out with. It was like there wasn't a lie in there that I didn't know. I had just forgotten so much.
Sure, that's why it's good to have it all assembled. Roy,
and
thanks.
One other quick recommendation to the listeners, Buzz Flash is promoting Orwell Rolls Over in His Grave as a DVD. Well worth watching. Phenomenal. You got to order it, but it's well worth getting a couple people and swapping it around for $30. Pick it up. It's great.
Thank you, sir.
Talk to you.
Appreciate it. Yeah. BuzzFlash.com has a lot of books and DVD materials you can get. Now, Mike writes in, says he caught 9-1-1, thought it was a bit lackluster. Nothing put forth was groundbreaking, and everything it had said has been said time and time again. Well, you know, Mike, on the other hand, Mike ends by saying it'll create debate in much larger circles and help get people out to vote. Bravo, Mike. Oh, no, this isn't from, I'm sorry, it's not from Mike. This is Bravo Mike, meaning Michael Moore. But it's what I said. If you knew all this ahead of time, it ain't no big deal. But most of this has been kept from the American people. Most of the people I know knew all this when they went to see it, but just seeing it assembled in the manner that it has been pretty compelling. But, you know, everybody's not going to like everything. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. You're our final caller tonight.
Hi, Peter. This is Mike from Southfield.
Hi, Mike.
Yes. How you doing? Just want to talk about Fahrenheit 9/11. Got a chance to see it yesterday, and as you're saying, you know, it's not a big surprise if you were already knowledgeable of the issues, you know, but for me and most Americans oblivious to most of the things that went on, you know, you're just outraged in a sense, you know, and you're completely taking away by the conservatives' opposition to the movie, you know, and it seems like they're completely disingenuous to the issues, you know, because, you know, if you think about it, it wasn't much spin. It was a lot of it just brought out Bush saying a lot of these things, you know, and for him to, and all the things that were obviously provable, and a lot of things are just so clear-cut that you could, if they were wrong, you could just easily refute them, you know, but obviously they're not that, you know, easily to refute, so therefore they're probably true. I mean, and so,
well, that
so
would
what?
Stand
if you got a few things wrong, so what? But the idea is, I think, you know, the most of it is true, you know, and I think, you know, that this just confirmed a lot of my suspicions about the whole Bush administration.
Well, yeah, about disproving his contentions. Obviously, it's up to the more to make the argument, but the people refute him just simply in the mainstream press, simply by saying it's not true. Well, where's their argumentation that it's not? All right, thanks for being our last caller on Night Call. Talking about some of these films, The Hunting of the President. This is the Republican attempt to destroy the Clinton presidency is out in very limited release. The film I was talking about is called The Corporation. It's not out yet. It's going to come to the main theater in Royal Oak, and he says he's seen The Control Room, and it's an excellent and even-handed piece. All right, thanks for listening. Thanks for calling, and I'm going to... I got a lot of your emails to read. I'll read every one of them. Sorry I couldn't get more of them on the air. Stay tuned. We'll have our interview with the executive director of the Sierra Club. He'll talk a pretty frightening view of what's been done to our environment by Bushco.
Okay, so my friend Mary said she's taking this Writer's Edge course from Motown Harley Davidson and Taylor. And I say, I didn't know they teach classes to chicks on how to ride on the backs of motorcycles. So she gets all crouching monkey, hidden panda on me and kicks me there.
And my head explodes.
Then after I regain consciousness, Mary explains she's taking this week in motorcycle safety course for guys and gals at Motown Harley Davidson. She says, I'm learning safety today. And I say, no way. And she says, safety today. And I say, no way. And she says, safety today. And I say,
okay.
And now I have regained consciousness again, and Mary and all her hot friends are riding their bikes from Old Town Harley Davidson, and the ice I have on my crotch is starting to melt. Just watching them. Maybe I'm in heaven.
Oh, maybe not. The end.
Fun, food, and entertainment every Sunday this summer during Motown Fun Day Sundays. Log on to MotownHarley.com for more information. Motown Harley Davidson in Taylor on Telegraph, just north of Eureka. Remember, guys, chicks dig a guy on a real motorcycle. Buy a bike at Motown! Okay.
I simply can't believe, David, that somebody who has been engaging in credit card therapy can actually get help from the mortgage experts. Is that possible?
It's absolutely possible, and here's why. Your average American right now has $7,500 in credit card debt. Some more, some less, but it's okay. You know why?
Why?
Because interest rates are so low, you could take those balances totally away and move your rate down from 18% in some cases to 4, 5, 6% right in that range.
You mean on those credit cards that you're spending all kinds of money just for interest?
And paying just the minimum?
Wow, nobody, that's amazing.
Nobody wants to do that. So here's the deal. You've got some credit card debt. It's okay. You call the mortgage experts. We get you fixed up. We take this debt over here and we move it over here and the payment goes from up here to down here.
Something you can actually maybe pay off someday.
That's the goal.
Oh, that's great.
Are you with me?
I'm with you.
Okay.
And the mortgage experts.
Thank you.
Call them at 800-333-ROCK, 800-333-ROCK, or visit them on the web at rockfinancial.com.
Very pretty website.
Yeah. Quicken Loans Company, Equal Housing Lender, and David Hall and the mortgage experts are there. Daytime, nighttime, weekends, every time. All the time. At 800-333-ROCK.
Oh, just look at my holiday list.
What's the matter?
I'm going to have to power shop.
Buckle up, baby. We're going to Marshall Field's two-day sale.
Sister, I like the way you think.
Happy holidays. Oh, what fun it is.
Okay, what's first? Jeans for Uncle Freddie and the kids.
All men's, women's, and kids' denim jeans are on sale.
Don't mess with me now.
I'm serious.
Ooh, I may just have to get myself a pair.
It is better to give than to receive.
Good.
I need to give holiday ornaments to everybody at work.
Lucky girl. They're all on sale, too.
I need a bunch.
The more you buy, the more you
get.
No, save.
Oh, what fun. Dingle, 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 dingle.
What else?
Slippers and a robe.
For whom?
None of your business.
Oh, now it sounds like I'm the lucky girl.
Yeah.
Sleepwear and slippers for women and kids are all on sale.
Lucky, lucky you.
Are we done?
Well, I am.
You haven't even started.
The Marshall Field's two-day sale this Friday and Saturday. Some exclusions apply.
Gotta get going.
WRF in Detroit, the Night Call Show. Hi, Peter Werbe here with you. I just was told that I'm off next Sunday, so there's not going to be a Night Call Show. I'll put it on my website. I'll email those of you who are on my mailing list. Should have been telling people all during the show. Just got the information. So I'm going to turn out to be the hardliest working man in show business. All right, have a good rest of the night. Stay tuned for these interviews. I think they're pretty interesting.
Thank you very much for joining me. It's a pleasure to be with you as usual. I want to talk about the environment. That's kind of gone by the wayside in the face of everything that we've been experiencing, particularly over the last 6 months or so. And it's a real pleasure to bring to our microphones Carl Pope. He's the executive director of the Sierra Club, one of the most important environmental organizations in the United States. Carl Pope has been the executive director of the Sierra Club since 1992, and along with Paul Rauber, he has written this book. It's called Strategic Ignorance, Why the Bush Administration is Recklessly Destroying a Century of Environmental Progress. Carl Pope, welcome to the Peter Werbe Show.
It's great to be with you, Peter.
Now, this has got a real angry title, and it almost seems out of character for the Sierra Club. You must have some pretty strong feelings about this.
Well, this administration is unique. We've had a lot of administrations with different environmental policies, Republican and Democratic, liberal and conservative. We've never before had an administration that really wanted to fundamentally undo the environmental safety net that we developed in the United States at the end of the last century. We've never had an administration before that thought that Theodore Roosevelt's legacy, that environmental protection is the business of the national government, needed to be wiped out.
Mm-hmm.
And we've never before had a government that seemed determined to do everything it could to leave more American communities at risk from environmental harm.
Now, well, in a sense, that answers the question. I said, in a way, the title and kind of the anger in the title, it does seem somewhat out of character for the Sierra Club. Would you say that's true?
Yeah, this is a very different situation than we've ever confronted from any administration. If you go back to the 1980s under Ronald Reagan, we began cleaning up toxic waste dumps, and we cleaned up toxic waste dumps under George Bush Sr., and we cleaned up toxic waste dumps under Bill Clinton. And then last September 30th, this administration arranged for the Superfund, which pays for cleaning up these toxic waste dumps, to expire, so that the cost of cleaning up toxic waste dumps would now be borne by the American taxpayer, not the industries that created the problem.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm a big fan of the Sierra Club. It's one of the reasons, Carl Pope, I wanted to have you on the show, particularly since you've written a new book, Strategic Ignorance. But I would say there's only one thing I disagree with. It's in your press release. It says, it's no secret that the Bush administration has spent the last 3 years dismantling America's environmental protections. I think it's more of a secret than this line lets on.
I think you may be right. The administration has spent as much energy covering up its tracks as it has spent shredding the environmental safety net. When they go out to delay cleaning up mercury that's coming into the Great Lakes from power plants, and they delay that cleanup for 10 years, they call it clear skies.
Mm-hmm.
When they decide to make it easier for timber companies to go out and cut down magnificent old-growth trees on our national forests at a subsidized price, they call it healthy forests. So I don't think the public has really connected the dots. I don't think people in Detroit understand that the reason they can't go to Lake St. Clair so much in the summer is in part because this administration has slashed funding for clean water. That the reason that the fisheries in the Great Lakes states all have these health warnings for women of childbearing age is because this administration doesn't want to use easily available control technology to get the mercury out of the air.
Now, my wife always poses the question, and I don't know if it's answerable. Since George Bush, all the Republicans, all the industry lobbyists, all the polluters, last time I checked, although sometimes there is some doubt about this, but I guess we have to believe they inhabit the same planet. Why wouldn't they be as strong an environmentalist as the Sierra Club?
Well, if you look at where they live, at the zip codes they live in clean air zip codes. The president's ranch in Crawford, Texas, is in a county where the general public drinking water supplies have very high levels of arsenic. But I assure you the drinking water at the president's ranch has been cleaned up. And the vice president may not want the federal government to fund the national parks, but he owns a ranch out right next to Grand Teton National Park. So I think these folks do share, they have the same, they're, you know, they drink water and they breathe the air. they just don't think it's terribly important what's in the water and the air that other people breathe. They don't think it's the job of the national government to protect every American. They think Americans should protect themselves, and they protect themselves by, as I said, living in clean air zip codes, and the president has the resources to get his own water treatment system at the ranch, and the vice president has wildlife on his very own ranch. The rest of us aren't so lucky. They don't seem to be concerned about the quality of the environment we inhabit.
Now, one of the defenses I hear from every conservative and every Republican is this is all just liberal argumentation. This the Sierra Club is this liberal organization that supports the Democrats, and they're looking for every little pinprick to hang a bad rap on George W. Bush. How would you define the politics of the Sierra Club?
Well, I think politics is about a very mainstream. And I have to disagree with you. If you listen to Senator McCain, who the last time I checked was definitely a conservative Republican, he is taking on this administration's environmental policy very vigorously. If you look at Senator Chuck Hagel from Nebraska,
yeah,
who originally was opposed to the Kyoto Protocol because he didn't think it was a good way to clean up global warming, but he's been very clear that he is deeply, deeply upset with the Bush administration, because in place of Kyoto, instead of proposing a better way to clean up global warming, they've proposed not to clean up global warming at all. The outgoing vice president of the Sierra Club is a Republican who's running for public office, is a Republican in North Carolina. So a lot of conservatives, a lot of Republicans. In fact, I was a keynote speaker at the presidential nominating convention of the Libertarian Party in Atlanta week before last. And at that convention, which was full of people who were definitely, you know, thought of themselves as conservatives, they told me they don't think this administration is really conservative. They don't think this administration is really Republican. They think this administration is really radical.
Well, libertarians, though, they don't think the government should intervene in the market process at all. I'm surprised that they would want someone like yourself, Carl Pope, who thinks that the government has a task and a duty to intervene to protect our natural heritage.
But they believe that what we have to do is to find out a way that we can all enjoy clean air and all have clean water. They're concerned about the asthma at the school down the road. Now, their methods of doing so are a little different than ours, but where we come together is we both agree that what this administration has done is to make it easier for corporations to get government subsidies to make the rest of us unsafe. And they are very, very concerned about the way in which this administration, in their view, is allowing irresponsible corporations, which is a minority of corporations, but irresponsible corporations are being allowed to run roughshod over all of us by this administration. And that's an area where the Sierra Club and the libertarians agree.
The book is Strategic Ignorance, Why the Bush Administration is Recklessly Destroying a Century of Environmental Progress. Its co-author, Carl Pope, is the executive director of the Sierra Club. He's my guest on the Peter Werby Show. Interestingly, Carl, I thought I had had some sort of time warp. Somebody started complaining to me just before I came in to do this interview with you about welfare going to poor people. And I'm thinking, did you just wake up, Rip Van Winkle, after about 30 years? I mean, because you mentioned subsidies to industry. What in terms of our individual tax dollars, that we as individual taxpayers, you mentioned subsidies. Tell us how that works in the field that you're concerned about, the environment.
Well, for example, if you look at what the administration is putting forward as a national energy policy, this energy bill that has been flopping around in the Congress, and the president and the vice president have been trying to pass it for the last 2.5 years, depending on which version of the bill you look at, it's had $38 billion worth of subsidies for the oil industry, the gas industry, the coal industry, and the nuclear industry. None of them, last time I checked, were exactly poverty-stricken. None of them really needed more taxpayer dollars to make the air dirtier and to ruin clean water and put our health at risk. But the administration actually is in favor of those subsidies. With regard to timber companies, I can no longer tell you how much of your taxpayer dollars are going to subsidize timber companies, because the administration just stopped the Forest Service from keeping records of how much money they were losing on each timber sale.
Mm-hmm.
So you literally cannot find out anymore how much of your money is going to subsidize timber companies, because the administration isn't keeping the records anymore.
Well, tell us, though, exactly what you mean by subsidize, because some people get the idea that they're actually, or are they, getting cash?
They're actually get cash. I mean, in the case of the Forest Service, what they do is they go ahead and, the Forest Service may spend $10 million doing work, building roads, and getting a timber sale ready, and then they'll allow a timber company to come in and cut down the trees for $4 million.
Hmm.
So, in effect, the timber company gets effectively $6 million from the government. In the case of the nuclear power industry, what they were talking about was having the federal government pay companies to build nuclear power plants. And the companies would then own the nuclear power plants, but the government would actually give them actual money from the Treasury to build these things. And they would, in fact, guarantee that even if these plants didn't work, the companies that build them would make a profit. That's a pretty sweet deal.
Now, the corporations, people that are the recipients of the taxpayer largesse, they want greater profits. What drives the Bush administration people? Is it ideology, or is it they themselves are these corporate owners in many cases?
Well, it's a combination of the two. First of all, the Bush administration is very financially dependent on these particular corporations that live off of public largesse, people like the nuclear industry, the timber companies. These people that get big public benefits have been very generous to the president and his campaign. So there's campaign dollars at stake. There's the fact that, people like the vice president got pretty rich working for some of these corporations, Halliburton and Oil Company. And finally, there is an ideology. This administration really believes that the government shouldn't be protecting us. We should each be trying to protect ourselves. And if that means that a great many American kids end up with asthma because they live in neighborhoods with bad air quality, they think that's worth it to get rid of this idea that the national government is going to make sure that the environment that every American lives in is got air that's fit to breathe and water that's safe to drink. They think that's a bad idea. They think Teddy Roosevelt, who once said, "This will never permanently be a good country for any of us to live in unless it is eventually a good place for all of us to live in." That's the idea that they're opposed to. They think Teddy Roosevelt was really wrong when he set out and said, "Americans are all in this together, and we all ought to take care of each other as part of a community." They want each of us, they want us each to take care of ourselves and don't worry about the other guy.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about that a little, and because there is this kind of prevailing mythology that when government does things, it does things bureaucratically, the small guy gets kind of ground up. Ultimately, government is inefficient in doing what it sets out to do and only benefits the bureaucrats. And so that there is, and particularly probably found that among some of the libertarians you spoke to that you mentioned, that it's the market and market-driven solutions that ought to take precedence here.
Well, first of all, markets are very powerful things. But, when I go to the grocery store, I have to pay for what I take. The problem with the way this administration applies markets to the environment is they want to give it all away. They don't want to charge corporations for what they take from the rest of us. And at the same time, I think Yellowstone's a pretty wonderful place. I think the government has shown in the case of the national park system that there are some things it does very well. Now, there are also things the government doesn't do very well, and I frankly think it doesn't build cars very well. What the federal government ought to do is to tell the auto industry what kinds of safety and environmental standards the autos they build need to meet, and then let the auto companies build the cars. I don't really think the federal government is very good at building cars, but it's awfully good at saying, something, if you're going to build a car, you have to build a car that won't make people sick. If you're going to build a car, you have to make a car that won't destroy the world's climate, that won't leave us dependent on imported oil from the Middle East. But then they ought to get out of the way and let the auto companies build the car for us.
I know, Carl Pope, that you, in your book, Strategic Ignorance, that you have solutions, but they are good ones. I mean, I've looked through them. But this sounds like something I would ask as a last question, but it occurs to me, given the forces that are arrayed against the environment, these huge corporate forces, these political forces, is the Sierra Club any match for these opponents of the environment?
Well, the Sierra Club certainly isn't a match, and we never have been, and we don't need to be. It's the American people that are a match for these forces, and it's the American people who actually ensured that, from 1973 to 2003, every single year, America's beaches and harbors and rivers got cleaner. Only in 2003 did we start going backwards again. Starting in 1980 under Ronald Reagan, every single year we cleaned up more toxic waste sites than we discovered. Only in 2003 did the Superfund run out of money. It's the American people who produced the environmental progress that we had from 1970 to 2000. And it's the American people who need to insist that our politicians put us back on the forward path, the path of environmental progress, the path we've been on for 30 years, actually the path we were on most of the 20th century, because that's the path the American people want to be on, and politicians do work for us, but we're not always very diligent about supervising them. You need to show up at the polls and choose a politician at all levels, the president, U.S. Senate, Congress, legislature. You need to choose politicians who will protect your family and your community, not only from foreign threats, but from threats here at home. This administration has done a very good job at that.
Carl Bope's new book, Strategic Ignorance, is available through the Sierra Club, sierraclub.org. It's produced and distributed by the University of California Press. Yeah, it just occurred to me, I'm not exactly clear what the title refers to, Strategic Ignorance. What's that mean?
It refers to the fact that this administration really understands that since what we really all want is air and water that are safe and communities that have parks and natural beauty, that the only way they can advance their goal of dismantling the federal role in protecting the environment is to keep us ignorant about what they're doing. That's why I used the example of the fact that they no longer even keep records on the subsidies they give the timber industry, because that way a reporter can't go out as reporters used to do and report every year on whether it's $500 million or $1 billion. They've shut down scientific research with a very heavy hand. They've distorted science. They've taken material off government websites. They've denied you information you used to get under the Freedom of Information Act. They are really trying to keep the American people ignorant about their environmental policies as a way of achieving their strategy of dismantling the governmental role in protecting the environment.
Mm-hmm. Now, Bush's dad declared himself the environmental president, and Bush and Gore had supposed high marks for the environment. Gore particularly was known as environmentalist. Was the Sierra Club critical at all of Gore and Bush? Or excuse me,
Clinton.
No, I'm sorry, I misspoke myself. I get them confused sometimes. Clinton and Gore, was the Sierra Club.
We had lots of criticisms of Bill Clinton and Al Gore because we thought there were lots of things they could have done a better job at. But they were moving us forward, as was President Bush Sr. We had been moving forward, and what's remarkable about this administration is we're now moving backwards.
I wonder what his dad says about all of this. In fact, everything from the Iraq War to the environment. I guess he's just, what's that Beatles song where at one point they say, Junior, behave yourself. He's not doing it. Carl Pope's my guest on the Peter Werby Show. The book is Strategic Ignorance, Why the Bush Administration is Recklessly Destroying a Century of Environmental Progress. Tell us, Carl, about lobbyists and what role they're playing, both in terms of pressure that they're able to bring to bear on the Bush administration, but also, I think it was in your book, I was looking through it, that they've become the regulators of the industry they once represented.
Well, it used to be that lobbyists would go and make a case to federal regulators. They would present the case, and then the regulators would also take input from the public, and then the regulators would decide what to do. Well, the Bush administration has greatly simplified that process. The first thing is, as I said, they no longer provide the general public with the right to participate and make comments. They don't take comments from the general public in most cases. Try leaving a voicemail with the White House saying you don't like one of the president's policies. Very difficult thing to do, actually. They put you into voicemail hell. Second thing, as you mentioned, they hired a bunch of former lobbyists and, in some cases, people who were still drawing salaries as lobbyists to be federal regulators. The guy named Stephen Growls in the Department of the Interior is still drawing a salary from his old lobbying firm, which represented mining companies and energy companies. And the third thing they did is, even though they've hired former lobbyists to be the regulators, they don't make them write the regulations. They just allow the companies that are being regulated to submit proposed regulations and publish them. So the people who are supposed to be being regulated, the people who are supposed to have to follow the standards, are getting to write the rules. And I have to tell you, if I was a basketball player and I could write the rules,
okay,
even though I'm only 5 feet, 6 and a half, I could probably write rules that would give me a big advantage. You shouldn't allow the people you're trying to ensure that they protect the rest of us. You shouldn't allow them to write the rules and regulate themselves.
No, certainly not. Now, when lobbyists become the regulators, that, as you indicate, I mean, that's certainly a problem. And what is, I guess what comes out to me, besides the bad effects that this is, and it's always probably done with a nod and a wink, is the immense arrogance. This is done in a manner that they appear to have no fear about it having repercussions. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I would, if I was going to do what they were going to do, I would say, well, gee, I better get somebody once removed so it doesn't appear as though I've put the fox in charge of the hen house.
Well, you would think that they would at least pretend to be listening to the rest of us, even if they then ignored what we said. But, you know, what really is the harm of making it possible for somebody to leave a message on the White House voicemail system saying, I really disagree with what the president's doing about clean air? They can still ignore it, but they don't seem to think they even have to pretend to listen to us. They really don't think they work for us. I think their attitude really is they're in charge. The president was elected or selected, depending on your point of view. And since they're in charge, we have to do what they want. They don't have to listen to us anymore.
Now, as you say in the subtitle of your book, Why the Bush Administration is Recklessly Destroying a Century of Environmental Progress, if Bush is turned out of office, will this go from environmental hell to environmental heaven immediately, just with John Kerry becoming president?
Well, it won't go to environmental heaven because we weren't in environmental heaven in November of 2000. We were making some progress, but we still had a ways to go. But fortunately, the Congress, even though it is controlled by the president's party, has refused to go along with most of the president's legislative program. So most of what he's done just by executive power, which means that John Kerry can undo it. So, in fact, we will be able to get back on a forward path pretty quickly once we have new leadership in the White House. And the key ingredient we need here is new leadership in the White House.
Mm-hmm. Now, the Sierra Club, as I said earlier, has proposals, has programs, has a vision for an America that has a sound environment, which I would say we do not have now and didn't have even in 2000. But as you indicated, we were making forward progress. If you had the ear, and you very well may, because the Sierra Club and environmental voters are extraordinarily important, what would you say to John Kerry to say, here's what we would have to do to make this country environmentally sound?
Well, you can pretty much take, with the one exception of diesel engines, where the administration has done a decent job of insisting that they be cleaned up, you could pretty much take all the executive orders that George Bush has issued and just cancel them.
Okay, there you go.
Take all the regulations he suspended, put them back into effect. Take all the parks and monuments and wilderness areas that he opened up to commercial development and say, wait a minute, we don't want commercial development in our parks and wilderness areas and wildlife refuges. So it's really, the blueprint's really straightforward. You just have to take what the Bush administration has been doing and go back and do what we were doing in a bipartisan way under previous administrations.
Well, then we're at 2000. We're at the year 2000. How would we move forward? What are the areas of the greatest concern to the Sierra Club?
Well, I would then say the first thing I would say to John Kerry, and he's actually committed to do this, is we have got to do something about our energy policy, and that something doesn't mean more subsidies for the oil industry. It means reducing our dependence on fossil fuels, developing both energy efficiency and diversified renewable energy resources like wind and sun. We need to unhook ourselves from our addiction on Middle Eastern oil. It's bad for our health. It's bad for global climate. It's bad for national security. It's bad for our economy. Think of how much money we could keep here at home if instead of importing oil from the Middle East, we were building windmills on the Great Plains. That would all be money that would stay here at home. That would all be pollution that's not going into our lungs. And that would be carbon dioxide that wouldn't be destabilizing global climate. And that would, frankly, we wouldn't have to defend the Middle East. We could just defend North Dakota, which would be a lot easier and put a lot fewer American lives at risk.
Absolutely. Robert Redford has said about Karl Popp's Strategic Ignorance book, this dramatic presentation of fact will leave the reader astonished at the sheer scope of the Bush administration's self-interested and ideological-driven dismantling of a century of environmental stewardship and protection. The book is Strategic Ignorance, Why the Bush Administration is Recklessly Destroying a Century of Environmental Progress. It's available from sierraclub.org and also at bookstores around the country. Certainly check your independent bookstore first. It's produced and distributed by the University of California Press as well. That's ucpress.edu. Carl Pope, thanks for joining me on the Peter Worby Show.
Thanks, Peter. It's been delightful. I hope folks in Detroit are having a good week.
You're listening to WRIF.com. Getting ready to move into your new home? Got a business to relocate? Need help moving and packing delicate or fragile stuff? For your moving needs, don't bother calling the middleman when you can go straight to the boss. The professionals at Boss Moving and Service. Boss Moving and Service has been family owned and operated for over 20 years. They specialize in local moving with a fleet of 9 trucks. They carry a full line of packing materials. They're licensed by the state and fully insured. Boss is also your home and business relocation specialist, whether it's one item, a piano, or organ, maybe a delicate antique or an entire truckload. Whatever you need to make your move go smoother, Boss Moving and Service has you covered. Compare Boss Moving's low prices to the other guys, and you'll learn what others in Metro Detroit have known for years. Don't mess with the middleman. Go straight to the boss. Call the professionals at Boss Moving and Service toll-free at 800-706-6644. Call today for a free in-home estimate at 800-706-6644. Remember, don't mess with the middleman. Go straight to the boss.
Imagine not being afraid to go to the dentist. Imagine being able to accomplish all your dental care in as little as one appointment. This is what sedation dentistry at Dr. Katz in Livonia can do for you. You'll be able to smile with confidence and be proud of your appearance. If you've been putting off years of dental work, sedation dentistry will change your life. Over 35 million Americans have some level of anxiety when it comes to going to the dentist. But for many, it's more than being afraid. At Dr. Katz in Livonia, they understand that your fears may have kept you from a dentist, but there's no need to feel embarrassed. At Dr. Katz in Livonia, they're not here to judge you. They're here to help you and encourage you so that you can have the confidence a beautiful smile can bring. The experienced clinical team members at Dr. Katz in Livonia will make certain that you're relaxed and completely comfortable as they monitor you very closely while you're sedated. Many patients feel no discomfort whatsoever during and after treatment. It may be as simple as taking a pill. Let Dr. Katz help you to enjoy your visits to the dentist with sedation dentistry. Wake up to a beautiful smile at Dr. Katz in Livonia. Call today for your free consultation at 734-464-2000. That's 734-464-2000.
We've got a program. You perfectly in medical weight loss, shape of things to come.
My name is Edward Benoit. I've lost 114 pounds on a medical weight loss clinic program.
My name is Ramon Dawson. I went from a 44-inch waist to a 33-inch waist. Don't waste another day. The program, it does work.
Imagine having the best summer of your life. You can lose all the weight you want in time for summer for only $1 per pound. Go where Ed, Ramon, and thousands of other men and women have found a way to live a better life. The medical weight loss clinic works one-on-one with you. Team up with the medical weight staff and you can lose all the weight you want for only $1 per pound without drugs, without frozen food, just a regular grocery store menu and constant support.
Some restrictions may apply.
Call Medical Weight Loss now for your free consultation. Call 1-800-GET-SLIM. That's 1-800-GET-SLIM.
We've got a program that fits you perfectly in medical weight loss. It's a shape of things to come.
Good morning. Thank you very much for joining me. It's a pleasure to be with you once again and to bring you some interesting authors on this program, The Peter Worby Show. Joining me now is Stephen Watson, a fabulous book, a look at that fabled decade of the 1960s through the lens of Andy Warhol and the people around him, the films he made, the people that he came in contact with, the innovative work that came out of that period. The book is called Factory Made, Warhol in the 60s, and I'd also direct you to a related website. It's just called factorymade.org, and it's absolutely fabulous itself. Stephen Watson has written numerous books about the avant-garde, the advanced guard of arts, beginning before World War I. He's written about the high bohemia of the 1930s, the Harlem Renaissance, the Beat Generation, and this is culminating with work on the factory. And we'll talk about that. That's where Andy Warhol made what he made. Stephen Watson, welcome to the Peter Werby Show.
Thank you, Peter.
Before we start out talking about Andy Warhol and the factory, tell us about your interest, and I don't think I'm misstating to say almost your fascination with the avant-garde of the art movement. What's that based in?
Well, you know, I mean, it's very interesting talking, first of all, to a Detroit audience. I'm a Midwest boy, Mound, Minnesota, in fact, so totally, in some way, totally outside this. And I think we all become obsessed with what we don't have.
Okay.
And so this was something, by the time I was a senior in high school in 1966, I was already fascinated with the Warhol factory.
Mm-hmm.
So sort of while it was happening. And the whole experience of writing the book is I'm now coming back many years later, interviewing these people and kind of putting it together. But, you know, what I said, I think we all want what we don't have.
Well, give me the larger context, though, because this is almost a book in a series about the avant-garde,
the advanced guard
of the arts.
Okay,
yeah.
I have written, you know, as you said so well, about pre-World War One, the Harlem Renaissance, the Beat Generation. All of these people, and it's not just people, it's groups, it's circles, have been very interested in it, both aesthetically and in terms of how we live our lives. They've been pioneers. And I think it's really important and fascinating. To me, fascinating.
Well, certainly, Andy Warhol, fascinating on lots of different levels. Honored recently with a stamp. And so people think they know Andy Warhol because he did the soup cans, and he did Marilyn Monroe, and he did, and then kind of maybe it begins to decrease greatly in terms of people's information and knowledge. Maybe I can start you off, Stephen Watson, in your book, Factory Made, Warhol in the 60s, by giving, and this is odd to do in a sense, I mean, sort of a negative spin. I was with a prominent sculptor yesterday, and he was showing me his work, and I mentioned that I was going to interview you. And I thought he'd react positively, and he just kind of got a scowl on his face, and he said, "Oh, Warhol was a fraud." If he was a fraud, he was a magnificent fraud. But that's always haunted him. Oh, you put soup cans on a canvas and sold it for X number of dollars.
Okay.
Tell me about this.
So, I mean, let me respond. I think it's, first of all, it's a good question. I think it's always a good kind of open question to think about, you know, what are the reasons things are done for? And Warhol has always been accused of that. In my own sense is, as I moved through the research for this book, I felt more and more how adventurous he was. And also, you know, that he did things that were not commercially very viable, that there was something that was really very interesting about doing things that were chaotic and unusual. And we all think we know Warhol because we know the soup cans.
Right.
You know, there's a sense everybody in America owns Warhol because they know the basic icons. But there is a side that
I look at in factory made that is, it's really pretty different than the usual sense of all this.
Tell us some about the factory. I mean, that phrase factory made.
Okay.
Tell us about the factory.
Okay. In general, the factory was a place, very specifically, East 42nd Street, former hat factory from 1964 to 1968. It was the place where Warhol shot films, silkscreen canvases, recorded a novel, you know, did all sorts of things. It was completely done in silver foil and silver paint. It was a kind of installation, both, you know, physically, but psychologically and socially. And this is what I love. It was a place where anything could happen. And it did. And it was recorded.
Yeah.
And that's a amazing thing. So it's the fact, when I say the factory, it's both a, you know, a physical place, but it's also something kind of larger.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, why I just kind of react badly when someone says, oh, Andy Warhol was a fraud. Anybody could have put soup cans on a canvas. Nobody did. That's the first thing. Secondly, when something energizes so many people, as I mean, just the front cover of Factory Made, Warhol in the 60s, and you see, I can't even count them quickly, 12, 15 people surrounding the always enigmatic Warhol, who is what? He's got a camera up and he's taking a photograph of the photographer.
Exactly. I love the cover.
Yes, it is. It is wonderful.
Yeah.
I mean, how self... I mean, it all seemed so self-conscious, though, in a manner that that normally you don't associate with the arts. I mean, that's kind of a vague question.
Well, I mean, let me just say, I think the 60s was a time of lots of kinds of experimentation. And the Warhol films, which dominated, you know, the mid-60s, they were totally about experimentation, i.e., what would happen if you turned the camera on for 3 minutes and the subject could do whatever they wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about, part of it is, it's about exploring things. I don't think we have to say, oh, that's really great art, about any specific thing. I think that the idea, though, of exploring and seeing what things look like is very important.
Well, now
it's a kind of play.
Yeah, use that phrase, great art. I mean, last time I went to the Museum of Modern Art, I think it was, there were Andy Warhol paintings in there. So
there's lots of Andy Warhol paintings.
Yeah, I'm just trying to remember which.
No. I think, you know, The financial verdict is in on Warhol's art. It continues to sell incredibly. He's in museums, definitely. What are not so well known are the collaborative things he did in the mid-60s. And that's, you know, exemplified by the film.
Mm-hmm. Now, I read in your book, Factory Made, my guest is its author, Stephen Watson, that he made 500 films?
Yes.
How? Well, I assume they weren't all feature length.
No. You know, most of those, many of those, are three-minute so-called screen tests. And what that meant was that people that came to the factory, he invited them to sit for three-minute screen tests. They would sit with a stable camera, and they could do whatever they wanted. So, you know, in addition to that, there's very long things like Empire, an unmoving shot of the Empire State Building.
Just the camera trained on you.
Narrative films like Lonesome Cowboys. There's, you know, there's a variety of things. But part of, you know, he was very interested in moving so that he did new things all the time.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is what I mentioned earlier, Stephen Watson, that there was that there is a stamp out now honoring Andy Warhol. And they're on these sheets. I'm sure you've seen them. And they have this sort of typical Warholian pensive look.
Yes.
And this absolutely astounding quote, the astounding in the sense that it comes from the U.S. government. Andy Warhol is quoted on the sheet of stamps. If you want to know all about Andy Warhol, just look at the surface of my paintings and films and me, and there I am. There's nothing behind it. Well, we spent 100 years prior to that looking beneath the surface of everything. That was modernism and, you know, everything Picasso, that whole modern art movement.
Sure.
Examined what is beneath the surface. Suddenly here's Andy Warhol, quintessential postmodern, saying, this is it. And so he's always enigmatic. I mean, there, any sense yourself what was beneath the surface, or was he telling the truth?
Well, I think a lot of what is that he was telling the truth. Number one, he loved to look at for a long time at the images. I sincerely do not think he had any conscious philosophical thesis behind this.
Mm-hmm.
This is a man who is, you know, quote-unquote, cognitively impaired, i.e., doesn't read much, doesn't like that, comes to things through images, comes to things through looking. He loves looking. He's infatuated with looking. So it's, you know, it's not about, in his case, I think about thinking, oh, this means this. I think it's about, this is my infatuation, and I'm going to show it to you.
Now, in your book, Factory Made, Warhol in the 60s, because we see the public life of Andy Warhol. In fact, the photographs, and I see here it lists 130 black and white photograph film stills and snapshots by, you know, the people that surrounded him. It almost seems like he had no private life, that his entire life was public. I mean, is that just the you know, one's easy perception, or was there also a private Andy Warhol?
Well, I think he had, you know, 80% of his life was very public. I think the private life, there's a lot that you do not see. You know, when we say private life, we sometimes think, oh, that means love life.
Mm-hmm.
And he had, I would say, a number of boyfriends. It's not a terribly intimate situation. I think the energy is mostly in the public life.
Hmm. Now, is any of this ever said with this? I mean, it seemed to me some of the stuff was said with a great sense of irony, at least what he wrote, or maybe he just dictated and was printed. I was thinking of, I think it was in the magazine High Times, where there was an essay over his name that was called Why I Love to Live Fast. Have you seen that?
Remind me.
Okay, well, in he says, I love to live fast. He says, my favorite clothing is a jumpsuit, because you can jump out of bed and jump right into it.
Yes.
He said, he had a bunch of things, but one of them was, my favorite kind of sex is premature ejaculation. And, you know, he went on like this. And whereas he was saying, this is what I like, It seemed more of a critique of modern life, that it's way too sped up. So is there cynicism and irony there, or is it again?
I think there's not irony.
Well, that's amazing.
You know, my own sense of this is, you know, when he gave public interviews, there was a combination of a mask, but partially that mask is just telling the dumb, literal truth,
mm-hmm,
as he saw it.
What energized him and the people around him? I mean, let me maybe paint it a little clearer. I mean, there were so many people around him. He had so many different projects.
Yeah, let's talk about some names.
Yeah, let's go ahead. Let me just reintroduce you. Stephen Watson is my guest, and brand new from Pantheon Books, a factory-made Warhol in the 60s, to get a good look at it. And I think you said before our interview off-air, Stephen Watson, that if you go to factorymade.org, the website, there's many of the people you interviewed, and you get other voices in this.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I mean, for me, it's like really exciting to be able to do a website where it is video of the interviews I did with the factory people. So you can read the book, but the other side is you see the people, their body language and the way they express themselves. And, you know, when I say the other people, the factory was an extraordinary range from people like the Betsy Johnson, the fashion designer, to Lou Reed of the Velvet Underground and John Cale, and Billy Name, who silvered the factory, and Taylor Mead, who performed in many of the movies, and Viva, who performed, and International Velvet, and, you know, one could go on and on. But it's a lot of people.
Now, I remember, you know, the station is a rock and roll station, and many, many people are familiar, and probably most of the audience, with Lou Reed and the Velvet Underground. And as I remember, the first album, didn't it say, like, Andy Warhol presents the Velvet
Underground? I mean, no. A very quick version of that story John Cale and Lou Reed and Sterling Morrison and Mo Tucker were playing in Greenwich Village, and Warhol came to them with Paul Morrissey, very interested, and they decided to produce them. At that point, the Velvet Underground was completely unknown. They produced the first album, The Velvet Underground and Nico, with a great, you know, banana. And they performed in the East Village at the Dom in April 1966. So that's now a completely legendary album.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to remind people that when you said with the banana, it has a Warhol cover with a banana that it can actually, you can take the peel off. And what are they worth now? I actually have one. Never mind. I wouldn't part with
them. I don't know, but I've got a lot.
I have to say, I'm not going to get rid of any of my nostalgic album or items unless it's in the thousands. I do have my price. Andy Warhol actually did, if I remember correctly, did connect his name up directly.
Andy connected his name whenever he could.
Yeah, okay.
You know, I mean, I don't mean that in a bad way, but he was totally about that. There was one point where he put an ad in the Village Voice saying, you know, Andy Warhol will present positive compliments about film, whips, musical instruments, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So he was totally interested in doing that. But part of what fascinated me was that he could find the people and the groups that were central, really central to that moment.
Well, that is the key, and as we said coming into this, your interest in the avant-garde, the advance guard of art movements, and I mean, what is this? I mean, some of these questions I realize are so broad, but when there is an avant-garde, what does it leave when it's no longer the avant-garde? I mean, what kind of cultural patterns, for instance, does Andy Warhol and so many people around him? What's left after that period that you write about in the 1960s?
Well, I mean, first of all, I think in terms of what they leave, first of all, it's not like anybody leaves models like, oh, live like me. But they do leave something that's really important for the imagination for several generations younger. A sense of experimentation, a sense of, you know, we are not all alike, we are not all commercial, we are not all lots of things, and that's, to me, just in the broad way, really useful.
What do you hope? I mean, obviously, anybody that goes to the efforts that you have to print factory-made Warhol in the 60s, I mean, there must have been an enormous amount of work. It's a 500-page book. It's extraordinarily attractive with its 130 photographs, a lot of marginalia with all sorts of information as you read along. And, I mean, every author's dream, of course, is that, quote, everybody would buy it. But on the other hand, does this fit into what you just said, that I would think that you would hope that a lot of younger people would not use so much Andy Warhol as a model, but the idea of going beyond what's prescribed now.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, as I say, no, but it's not like I ever think, oh, copy Andy Warhol, oh, copy this one or that one. But I really believe that the sense of experiment and self-discovery and opening up and, you know, in that kind of broad way is really useful.
Mm-hmm. Now, Factory Made, as we said, refers to the factory where so much of what Andy Warhol and his friends put together in everything from dance, poetry, film, rock and roll, and lots of other experimental items for that era. And you talk about it began in 1964, and it ended in 1968 with a very, very dramatic event. Maybe you could, just as we come to the end of this interview, Stephen Watson, tell us what happened.
Sure, sure. Yes, it was an exactly frightening punctuation to a kind of era. There was a woman named Valerie Solanas, who some of your listeners know is the subject of I Shot Andy Warhol, and that is exactly what she did. That's a complicated story, but on June 3rd, 1968, she shot Warhol. He was dead for 1.5 minutes, came back to life, and it ended a certain era and began another era.
Now, Valerie Solanas, she wrote what was called the Scum Manifesto, the Society for Cutting Up Men, and she, rather than just being rhetoric, she didn't cut it. So she moved this into practice. Why did she see Andy Warhol, of all the perhaps who she could identify as sexist figures, if he was, as a particular target?
Well, I would say, first of all, it's in this case, I don't think it really is about sexism. I think Valerie was, first of all, very smart, very funny, and also very paranoid schizophrenic.
Mm-hmm.
And she saw Warhol as a kind of controlling figure. And in the paranoid scheme, he fit in. I don't think it was about, you know, some people said it was because he lost her play. But I think it's more that she identified him with a certain kind of power.
Mm-hmm. And I've not made it through your book. In fact, I've just been skimming through it and centering on particular areas of it. So I didn't see in here whether you were able to interview. I don't even know whether she's still alive.
No, not alive.
Oh, okay.
No, she died in 1988.
All right. Well, we are out of time, and how I know it sounds
That's
why you. That's
amazing.
That's why you wrote
a Peter. You talk well.
Well, thank you very much. That's why you wrote a 500-page book, though, Stephen Watson, because it would.
And I just want to say, there was one point where I was asked to cut 100 pages.
No, no, no.
You know, because it's a very, very big story.
Mm-hmm.
And I really, you know, attempted to not make it long, but it's a very big story.
It is.
And in my mind, a really important one.
And I think that you've done a marvelous job. Arthur Danto says, the best imaginable book on the 60s of Andy Warhol's Silver Factory, The Exploding Plastic Inevitable, and the Appropriation by Mainstream Culture of the Underground Avant-Garde. My guest has been Stephen Watson. The book is Factory Made, Warhol and the 60s. It's published by Pantheon. And remember, too, you can get a look at some of the people that my guest actually interviewed. If you go to factorymade.org, it's also on my website as well. Thank you so much, Stephen Watson.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to the Riffs Night Call. Night Call is a public affairs presentation of 101 WRIF Detroit. The opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily reflect those of the management or sponsors of WRIF Radio or Greater Media Detroit. Night Call is hosted every Sunday night by Peter Werby. Now stay tuned for more Riff Rock, coming right up on 101 WRIF Detroit.
It's party time. Get a real feel of erotic image featuring Michigan's hottest male and female strippers.
Erotic Image.
Add a stripper to any party and watch your party come alive.
Erotic Image delivers the sexiest and most seductive entertainers right to your doorstep or wherever the party's at.
For your next bachelor, bachelorette, birthday, or any party occasion, give the gift that unwraps itself. Call Erotic Image at 888-41-STRIP.
Erotic Image, the name that says it all. Sexy, provocative, outrageous, but all in good fun.
Erotic Image, 888-41-STRIP.
Surf Erotic Image at eroticimage.com, the official home of Brutal Betty, the Erotic Image Dream Girls, the incredible hunks of Men in Motion, and those naughty awesome twosomes, the wild girly girls. Due to popular demand, Erotic Image has hosts and hostesses to kick off your party. Try one.
Go online and explore the Erotic Image Cyber Showcase. View the dancers, check their prices, and place your order online.
Erotic Image, where image is expertise, and the experience is always erotic.
Call Erotic Image at 888-41-STRIP. That's 888-41-STRIP.
Erotic Image, where image is everything.
Okay, so my friend Mary said she's taking this Writer's Edge course from Motown Harley Davidson and Taylor. And I say, I didn't know they teach classes to chicks on how to ride on the backs of motorcycles. So she gets all crouching monkey hidden panda on me and kicks me there.
And my head explodes.
Then after I regain consciousness, Mary explains she's taking this week in motorcycle safety course for guys and gals at Motown Harley Davidson. She says, I'm learning safety today. And I say, no way. And she says, safety today. And I say, no way. And she says, safety today. And I say,
okay.
And now I have regained consciousness again, and Mary and all her hot friends are riding their bikes from Motown Harley Davidson, and the ice I have on my crotch is starting to melt. Just watching them. Maybe I'm in heaven.
Oh, maybe not. The end.
Fun, food, and entertainment every Sunday to summer during Motown Fun Day Sundays. Log on to MotownHarley.com for more information. Motown Harley Davidson in Taylor on Telegraph, just north of Eureka. Remember, guys, chicks dig a guy on a real motorcycle.
Buy a bike at Motown! Okay.
Riff Rock. Next.
Hey, D-Hall, I got a question. I got this friend, he has a brand new house, and yet there are all sorts of things that they have to fix up. Is he a candidate for one of these new loans, remodeling loans?
Yeah, that's right up my alley.
Really?
Remodeling and home improvement in summertime.
You can put something together?
I'm actually not going to come over and do the hammer and nail thing, but I can provide the dough.
Oh, well, then that's important.
Yeah, and folks out there need to know who are maybe considering the new bathroom, the new deck, the new kitchen, whatever it is, maybe a little upgrade. They're going to be in their home for a while. Check your mortgage first. And I know some folks that could maybe help with that.
Really? Are they on call all the time?
Yeah, pretty much.
Daytime,
during the day, anytime, anywhere, evenings, weekends. Yeah, you got it right.
So all you have to do is just pick up the phone and call the mortgage experts.
Yeah.
800-333-ROCK. That's the phone
number.
That was
a heck of an idea.
Uh-huh. I thought so.
Do it. Call them.
Uh-huh. Or go online. See him on the web at rockfinancial.com. Rock
pretty Financial. Website, too. Very pretty website, yeah.
Oh, it's all decorated
Check
nice.
It out. Yeah, that's right. We did some home improvements on our website.
Oh, that's great. And it's probably financed by Rock Financial, a Quicken Loans equal housing lender.
Do you mind telling me what this is all about, mister?
Giving you back
to the Rock.
Quicker than anybody.
You always do that.
101, the Rib.
And swallow all my pain and selfless crying. Are you?
Let me out, I'm seeing you. Let me out.
lips are playing the same thing now. I've tried on long since his face won't lie. Time burns my soul's decaying. Sipping through the smoke and lies. Swimming exit, I love this. Die for some less than ever.